Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, happy Sunday, happy Father's Day. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. We've got so much to talk about, so much. I want to cover the first, episode 3 and 4 of Tucker's new little Twitter show, and not little, very big, actually. Then also, Mom in the second hour wants to cover for the Good News Report a whole bunch of stuff about COVID. And in the third hour, John Michael, I think, will be joining us to talk about colorblind casting. What else? There's one other clip that I want to play of Walensky lying to Congress. But other than that, but that should, I mean, honestly, that's enough for about 2 3-hour shows. So hopefully Elizabeth will be joining us soon. And if not, hopefully one of our others will. Let's see. And if not, if they can't jump on anytime soon, I'll just start with the Tucker clips because those are really pretty. So, okay. So let's just jump into it. Let's just play episode 3 of Tucker. It's, I think he did this the day that Trump was arrested. So, oh, there's Elizabeth. Go ahead and press 1. There's Mom. Yeah, the gang's all here. Here we go. Mom's here.
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. This is going to be a fun show. Elizabeth is here. Hello, Elizabeth.
Well, hi, baby. How are you?
I'm doing great. We've got so much to talk about today. I don't know if you heard the intro, but I'm going to cover the episode 3 and 4 of the new Tucker show. And cool. Their clips are like pretty, 10 minutes or so each. So that kind of helps. We're going to cover some COVID stuff. And in the third hour, John Michael will probably be joining us to talk about colorblind casting. And then Ty also said he might try to stop by.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. Awesome.
So how was your week? Give us some highlights.
Oh, my God. The highlights. Let's see. We strolled down memory lane. I remembered what it was like to be at Grandma's house and do nothing. Nothing but wait for the time to make dinner. And it was great. I'm on vacation. It's a staycation. And just kind of getting back to how life used to be, relaxing, staying away from the population. We used to never go anywhere. We would stay at home and relax. We lived without air conditioning. We'd open the windows at night and kind of wait for the time when it was a time to go outside and beat the heat and open the windows and have dinner and have little root beer floats on the back porch and watch the lightning bugs.
Oh,
and
that's
how life was.
Great.
Yeah. So I just kind of been doing that. So the highlights, you know, not many, just kind of chilling. Staying away from the...
Maybe we call those low lights.
What? Low lights?
We call those low lights or slow lights.
It's a slow. It's how it used to be. That's how summer... It was summertime. Summertime, you chilled. I'll pop in every so often to my email and see what the New York Times will tell me. And the New York Times is trying to tell you how to chill out, chillax, what you should do for summertime, which is kind of nothing. And I thought, that's what we need to get back to instead of frantic, you know, run to what's new, what's on the cusp of the end of the world or the new fashion or, you know, the new Happy Meal toy or whatever craziness that used to encompass everyone's magnetic abilities to open your eye and look, walk over here, follow us. that's kind of going away. And I thought, I like this. The big debate was over what type of umbrella to take to the beach. And I thought, oh, this is cool. And I could see where it's like, this one's outlawed because it's basically a camping tent and it's hideous. I was like, no, you guys can stay at home if you don't like the sun. People who go to the beach want to go outside. You don't need to have a, you know, full canopy over you. But that was the most controversy that I got into my mind. You know, I'm kind of like
decluttering. Was over beach umbrellas? That sounds like you're winning.
It is. It was. It was good. So I've just been enjoying, and I have to, like, gear up into becoming a productive member of society again. I was chuckling. I was like, you know what? I think I'm part sloth, because without the urgency to have to do something, I will do nothing. I will just lay around and the least path of resistance. I need something to motivate me in order to get me up and going. And I've always kind of been like this. I'm not like an overachiever on that end. So it's kind of cool to have a job per se. And I thought, you know, this really is good for my personality type, because I need to have structure and I need purpose, because it makes me feel good. So these nice vacation, it was like 3 weeks. I think that was sufficient. Because I'm like, yeah, I want to get up and do stuff. And without
I'm kind of feeling that way too. Like I'm not on vacation, but the babies left this week. They left on Monday for the whole summer. They go to their dad's during the summertime.
Oh, no.
And
the whole summer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor baby. Sorry.
I know. I hate
this
it.
It's hard.
It
would be really hard. I thought.
Yes, the whole
was like,
summer. The entire
for the
freaking
holidays.
Summer.
Oh,
and Christmas.
God.
And Christmas.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was Grandma chiming in on how she feels about that. Anyway, I'll mute myself again. Just thought I would say that.
Yeah. So, but go to what you were saying, I also need structure, and having the kids here is just, you know, it's part of my daily routine to, you know, get them up, get them, you know, we do breakfast, we, you know, these kind of things. And, you know, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, I don't really know what to do with them. I still have dogs, but like, I don't know. I feel like I don't have a whole lot of purpose at the moment.
I'm sorry, honey. I thought it was just for the weekend or the holiday, you know, the Father's Day weekend.
They don't come back.
You will love them ever so much more, and they'll love you so much more when they get back. That's hard. I know.
Yeah.
We never had that big, huge luxury of having that much time with my dad. I don't think they, well, I think parents do whatever they want when they get divorced. So they make themselves available or not available. So it was always like a big, big thing if we saw dad, and it wasn't that often. So that's kind of nice that they have a good chunk of time to be with their dad, just coming from that other side of it.
Yeah, well, I don't know how he goes as long as he does without seeing the children either, you know. But, like, and he's the one that chose to move, so it's not like, you know. So he chose this, but, like, I really honestly prefer that we had this 2-2-5-5 schedule. So it's like every Monday and Tuesday I had the kids, you know, every Wednesday and Thursday, you know, they had the kids, and, you know, or anyway, and then we'd have 5 days. You know, 2-2-5-5. So then, you know, every other weekend for 5 days you'd have, and that was good for me. You know, I liked that because it was still a routine. I didn't have to go without them for that long, you know, but, and it's always right before Father's Day. And it really bugs me, and it bugs my husband too, because, you know, my husband's really the dad around here. He's the one that, you know, does the discipline and, you know, the pep talks and, you know, and helps them with all, you know, everything a dad is supposed to do during the year. And then they always leave the weekend before Father's Day, you know? And so it's like, so anyway, I don't want to be a downer, but that's what's going on with me this week.
Well, and you know what? And it's, you're not the only one. I kind of thought about this a little bit. I don't know if you can hear me or not. I've got I'm multitasking like I run a fucking Greek restaurant in here. I'm making salads as I speak. With the full of my bra talking. So I talk. You have to see if you can hear me.
I thought you were a little muffled.
So, like I used to put my cigarettes right there, and now I got my cell phone. So you're not the only one. Most, you know, when I'm thinking about Father's Day, a lot of my generation keeps it in their bosom of like, oh, it's a special day, just like Mother's Day. Yeah, a lot of people don't, though, because we are a nation that is just splintered family-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so
mm-hmm.
many people that don't have families and never had a family. They have no idea what we're talking about because it's always been emptiness and heartache and doing without. So it's, I think it's good to talk about it because we're not the only one. And I think I was the only one in my whole family that was divorced. I was the first of the whole neighborhood and the whole, you know, nobody did that back then. Everybody stuck together, whether they were happy or not. And, you know, matter of fact, I'm sitting here. The cool thing about going back in time to when I was at my grandma's house, because there was like, there was so much there, but there was nothing. There was nothing that came and interfered because it was just a nice structured home life with a slow moving routine. God, I lost my thought here. But last thing I was talking about before I did this.
Well, since while you gather your thoughts, I'd like to add something. If you don't mind, Elizabeth. While you were gathering your thoughts.
Sure.
I would like to say that Joseph Ravitch, and I don't know if I can say his whole name on the radio show, has been the best dad to my grandkids, and I thank God for him every day. He is gentle and firm and loving and structured and kind and compassionate, and he sees them truly. He knows who they are, and he just loves them. Mm-hmm. And it is a shame that the children every summer go to their dad's house a couple of days before Father's Day because it's kind of like a shot in the face, but we'll leave that part alone. But I just would like to commend my son-in-law for the excellent way that he loves on my grandbabies on a national radio show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry for saying his whole name. We normally do that anyway, but I just wanted to make that point that I am proud of him. And that of the way that he loves my grandchildren. Anyway, Elizabeth, sorry for interrupting. I just wanted to end that thought.
Because you know, my thought was going towards how we have this vision, or not all of us, but the ones that grew up in it have this vision of everything was perfect back then. Things were better, and things were not as what they seemed because. You know, I've got all these pictures around the house, and you've got wedding pictures that go back far, and you've got the bride that would be either standing up or sitting down. You know, that meant, you know, if they were sitting down, they were knocked up and got pregnant, and they had to sit down, so the wedding picture didn't show that they were not the perfect girl. You know, and it's like, but they stayed together whether they, you know, that was because they were supposed to. And so you had the family, whether it was good, bad, or ugly. And now you don't have families. So these kind of things really weigh heavy upon everyone involved. You know, my neighbor, you know, recently divorced, and he's got both his kids here today. And, you know, it's like a shattered, it's like a dog limping, you know, because he's still licking his wounds. The kid's first words to me, meeting me, was, you know, my wife and I are separated. The kid's like, yeah, she wanted to, before she decided to ruin everyone's life. And so it's like, that's a family in crisis, you know? It's not like a happy, you know? In the world, we are limping like dogs on an emotional level. So I think it's therapeutic to talk about stuff like this, especially on a day like today, because I thought, could be listening. But, you know, people are just, they are alone. You know, not everybody has this magnitude of a family that they're going to get together and it's just like a traditional holiday. They want you to think it is. And, you know, if you pop on Facebook, it's a tribute of pictures and whatnot. But how many people are with their families? And most of our, I don't know.
That's true.
Fathers are dead, you know. Who has? I've got two little puppies here. So it's a, but I'm happy with my puppies. That's my, you know, my. I'm very happy and content with where mm-hmm. I'm at. You know, my life's not quite over yet, but I don't have all this huge stuff that other people have. That is on one end a blessing, and then on the other end is a curse. You know, it's kind of like we all got to get comfortable in our own skins with our predicament, our lives.
Although I do have to say that I probably should have done something like since for Mother's Day with abortion, we probably should have done a segment on vasectomies or something like that just to balance it out. But I think we'll stick with the happy stuff for now.
That would have been good. Yeah.
I prefer to go happy. I'm not much into the surgical butchery, but, you know.
Right.
Whatever you want. Do what you want.
No, I don't really have a segment for vasectomies, but. But with that, can we, let's get into the Tucker clips. So you guys good with that?
I'm fine with that.
The last two were excellent. In particular, the very last one, both of them were great. I look forward to hearing them again. You're going to love them, Elizabeth. They're both. Danielle, was one of them the war one?
Yep, that's the first.
Okay.
The other one was the day that Trump was arrested.
The dictator one. Oh, they're both excellent. You will love this one, Elizabeth. The first one, Elizabeth, it has to do with my favorite president was the no war president, and that is the mm-hmm. reason why they've been coming after him. So you will hear why Tucker believes that. And the second one is just freaking hilarious. Like I cracked up the entire time because biting tongue-in-cheek humor that made us love him all these years anyway. Anyway, so great idea, Danielle. Play him.
I do think that the satire is probably Tucker's best chance
ever.
But it's his best chance for not being, because how could, you know, this is like almost like Babylon Bee territory where it's
yep.
comedy, so they can't really take it down.
Yeah.
So here we go. Let's start with episode 3 of Tucker Carlson. 3, 2, 1.
Hey, it's Tucker Carlson. The Biden administration arrested Donald Trump this afternoon. They had him arraigned and fingerprinted in a Miami courthouse like the accused felon he now technically is. These were the first steps in a process that is designed to put Donald Trump behind bars for the rest of his life. Cable News carried every moment of it live. It's unprecedented, they told us, with what looked like shock. But they weren't shocked. They knew this was coming. Everyone who's paid attention knew it was. What just happened was always going to happen. It's been inevitable since February 16th, 2016. That's the day Donald Trump made a blood enemy of the largest and most powerful organization in human history, which would be the federal government. Despite what you may remember, it wasn't anything that Trump had said about immigration or trade with China or rapists from Mexico. Those are the stories that dominated the headlines that year. Trump's a racist, they screamed. Stop him! But inside Washington, that was just noise. None of it really rated. Identity politics doesn't mean much to permanent Washington. What matters, then and now, is foreign policy. The invasions and occupations and proxy wars. The decisions that determine which global populations will thrive and which will die. The policies that come with trillion-dollar price tags. The ones that, over time, have made the counties around D.C. the richest suburbs in the world. In Washington, that's what actually matters. And it's obvious when you look carefully. When there's a debate about anything else, for example, the debt ceiling, both sides take their assigned positions and they start yelling. But when Congress decides to start a war, no matter how foolish or counterproductive or obviously disconnected from America's core interests that war may be, when that happens, the leaders of both parties automatically jump behind it like circus clowns. And then they stay there, sometimes for decades. They defend that war relentlessly against all evidence until somebody finally rings the all-clear bell and they can begin to admit that actually, maybe it wasn't such a great idea. We meant well, but it just didn't work out. The good news is we've learned a lot of important lessons. In the end, they usually do say something like that, but only after emotions have cooled and the damning details have begun to fade from collective memory. It's an apology that's not actually an apology, much less repentance, and it's years too late to matter in any case. But until then, that's all you're getting. Until then, no dissent is allowed. That's the first rule of Washington. But somehow, Trump didn't bother to follow it. He is from out of town, so maybe he didn't know it was a rule, or maybe he just didn't care. Either way, 7.5 years later, we can point to the precise moment that permanent Washington decided to send Donald Trump to prison. Here it is. It's from the Republican candidates debate in Greenville, South Carolina.
We should have never been in Iraq. We have destabilized the Middle East. They lied.
Okay.
They said there were weapons of mass destruction. There were none, and they knew there were none. There were no weapons of mass destruction.
Okay. All right. Go.
We should never have been in Iraq, Trump said. We destabilized the Middle East. Now, by the time Trump said that, a lot of Republican primary voters were starting to reach the same conclusion. How could they not? But it was the next line that doomed Trump to today's arrest. They lied, he said. There were no weapons of mass destruction, and they knew there were none. Now, when he said that, a few in the crowd booed. Most just sat there in silence, stunned. Can he say that? Well, he said it anyway. And by saying that, he sealed his fate. That was the one thing you were not allowed to say, because it implicated too many people on both sides, which on this topic is really just one side. Hillary Clinton was guilty of it, but so was Paul Ryan. All of them were guilty. They all knew. They all lied. And to a person, they hated Donald Trump for exposing them. After that, it was pretty clear that even if he did get elected president, Trump was going to have a very hard time controlling the federal government he was supposed to be in charge of. Most of permanent Washington decided that thwarting Trump was the single most important mission in their lives. Everything depended on it. Many of them said so publicly. But others didn't say so publicly. In fact, the stealthier ones took another path. They ran toward Trump, not away from him. They sucked up to him. They ingratiated themselves to the man they intuitively understood was susceptible to flattery, which Trump is. And they did this in order to subvert his new administration from the inside. There were a number of these, and you could spot them immediately. They were flatterers. Invariably, the ones who flattered Trump the most hated him the most and disagreed the most strongly with his views. You saw them in the hallways of the White House and at press conferences. They were there slobbering over their boss with elaborate self-abasement, as if they were addressing a monarch or a god. It was a scene from the Ottoman court. It was filthy and decadent, and it was false. Mike Pence, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, Lindsey Graham in the Congress, they all called Trump a visionary genius up until the moment he lost power. And then they unsheathed their real agenda, as always the neocon war agenda, and they piled on with maximum force. Here's Mike Pompeo, for example, on Fox News this morning.
President Trump had classified documents where he shouldn't have had them, and then when given the opportunity to return them, he chose not to do that for whatever reason. When somebody identifies that, you've got to turn them in. And so that's inconsistent with protecting America's soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. And if the allegations are true, some of these were pretty serious, important documents. And so that's wrong.
May future historians hoping to unlock the mysteries of late Empire Washington study that clip, because it will reveal everything. That very same Mike Pompeo, the one who's sneering at Donald Trump on TV this morning, that guy served Donald Trump as both CIA director and as Secretary of State. Those are the two most powerful jobs in the federal government. And as he worked in those jobs, Pompeo promised, in fact, he swore, to support the president's agenda. Why? Because that's the way a democracy works. You vote for a candidate in the belief that his appointees will carry out the policies that you voted for. It's not about the president, it's about you, the voter. But Pompeo didn't do that. He didn't even try to do that. In fact, he undermined Trump's often stated commitment to peace and non-intervention abroad at every turn. His every waking hour was devoted to fomenting war in some faraway foreign country or other. Iran, Syria, Russia, North Korea, the list goes on. But rather than telling Trump that he disagreed with his ideas, as a man would, Pompeo toadied up to Trump, a man he despised, in the oiliest, most over-the-top way imaginable. Ask anyone who worked in that White House at the time. Who is the appointee most likely to tell Donald Trump on a daily basis that he was handsome, virile, sleek, and powerful? Mike Pompeo. That will be the consensus answer. Those of us who saw firsthand Pompeo's relentless kowtowing will never forget it. It was indelibly repulsive. No one with self-respect could do something like that, but Mike Pompeo did it effortlessly, with relish and verve. Now, this same person is telling Fox News viewers that he fears for the safety of our military, our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, in the approved phrase, because Donald Trump took some classified documents home and didn't immediately return them to the National Archives? What a lie that is. Mike Pompeo knows that's a lie. He spent his entire life in Washington. Washington is a city where internal memos about Labor Day are classified because everything is classified. Your government has classified more than a billion federal documents, most of them boring and pointless and a danger to no one, and locked them away in secret where you can't see them because you may be an American citizen, but not really, and therefore you don't have the necessary clearances to know what's going on. And by the way, none of this is done in order to make America safer any more than COVID restrictions were designed to keep you healthy. No, it's a caste system. That's the point. And you're the untouchable in this hierarchy. Mike Pompeo knows that. Everybody who works in Washington knows that. How many secret documents do you think Dick Cheney took home with him while he was running the Iraq War? How many did his wife read? She never had a clearance. We'll never know the answer because there is no chance Dick Cheney will ever be investigated or his staffers will be told to wear wires in his presence. He will never be indicted for this. Of course not. Dick Cheney is a neocon. Donald Trump is not. Dick Cheney supports war with Russia. Trump does not. That's the difference. The rest is just a distraction. The prosecution of Donald Trump is transparently political. He's literally Joe Biden's main political opponent. He's polling at over 60% among Republican voters right now. So Joe Biden is doing what no president has ever dared to do. He's using law enforcement to lock up his chief rival. That's happening right now. Anyone who denies it's happening is lying to you. But actually, it's worse than that. Trump's prosecution isn't just political, it's ideological. Nobody with Trump's views is allowed to have power in this country. Criticize our wars and you're disqualified. If you keep it up, we'll send you to prison. That's the message Washington is sending. Not just the Democratic Party is sending, but both parties are sending. Like so many Republicans, for example, the supposedly conservative governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, spent yesterday totally ignoring the destruction of the American justice system. Instead, he signed a highly important bill called the Crown Act, which, according to the celebratory tweet Abbott sent commemorating it, will, quote, prohibit discrimination based on textures and hairstyles historically associated with race. In other words, in Texas, cornrows are now protected by law. Having unapproved views about Ukraine is not. That's fine with most elected Republicans. They find Trump tiresome and embarrassing. Their donors hate him. They will not be sad if he dies in jail. But what about voters? What are they learning from this spectacle? Well, mostly they're learning that they have no power at all because nobody cares about them. But they already knew that. Unlike so many of our elected leaders, they have been to America recently. They know what it looks like. Have you seen it? If you've got a few days this summer, find out. Take a road trip and see for yourself. Drive 500 miles in any direction and then come home. How are things looking? Well, they should look great. The federal government spent $6.5 trillion last year. That's more than any government has ever spent, ever. So at the very least, you would expect pristine public roads. Oh, no. That's not what you see when you drive around this country. There are potholes and Jersey barriers everywhere. Looks like Tegucigalpa before the Chinese decided to rebuild the infrastructure of Honduras. We don't have China buying our roads. So they're falling apart. You'd think the people you would pass on your road trip would look happy and prosperous. Again, this is a very rich country. But a lot of them don't. Quite a few appear to be strung out on drugs. You see them shuffling by shuttered storefronts in small towns. And you wonder, as you see all of this, where did all the money go? It's certainly not here. Well, it's in Washington. It's in Fairfax and Loudoun counties and in leafy, perfectly manicured Northwest D.C. And, of course, a huge chunk of it went to Ukraine, to Zelensky and his friends. Not because you voted for that. You didn't vote to give it to them. You never would. But because Joe Biden and his many allies, from Chuck Schumer to Mitch McConnell to Paul Ryan And every single news anchor on all of television, all of them believe that Ukraine, its borders, its future, its infrastructure are all more important than the town that you live in. They sincerely think that, and it's obvious. Everyone in power thinks that, except for Donald Trump. Whatever else you say about him, Trump is the one guy with an actual shot at becoming president who dissents from Washington's long-standing pointless war agenda. And for that, that one fact, they're trying to take Trump out before you can vote for him. And that should upset you more than anything that's happened in American politics in your lifetime. Even if you don't plan to vote for Donald Trump, even if you would die before voting for Donald Trump, which is your right and a lot of good people feel that way, even still, the destruction of our democracy, which is the right of voters to support any candidate they want, even candidates who don't want war with Russia, the destruction of that should keep you up at night. Yes, Donald Trump is a flawed man, but his sins are minor compared to those of his persecutors. In this life, we don't get to choose our martyrs. We can only choose our principles, and America's are at stake.
John, hear people say the news is full of lies.
Okay. So what do we think? I know Mom already heard that, but Elizabeth, thoughts?
I can't believe that Mrs. Channing learned to read. But the one name, I was like, when is he going to compare him to Julian Assange? Because with the train of thought in the line of who they've been stopping, who's the most dangerous person on earth? It was the man who had the papers that proved that there were no weapons of mass destruction and that there were war crimes. And then you have the man who won't play games with these people, who wants to expose them. Very interesting take on this. I hadn't considered. See, I didn't see the CNN town hall. I'd like to maybe perhaps Google it, unless it's been National iCarved as classified information. Now you can't see it, but I heard that that was an amazing town hall on CNN, and I was kind of surprised that he would have even agreed to have done that. So I was back into the land of all of this. This is all theater. I'm not going to watch any of this anymore. But you go back and, like today, I'm listening to this new pastor. I love him. And I was like, listening to one of his, had a lot of really uplifting music. And I'm like, interesting. We don't have heroes. We haven't been given heroes in a very long time. Michael Jordan was not a hero, but that was the closest to a hero that any of these generations have had.
He was a bread and circuses hero.
He was him and Michael Jackson. And then you had your two, you know, I'm like, Tupac? What the hell? What did they do to your brains? I'm like, right. I guess I'm just too old to understand this. But you guys have been deprived of anyone of substance to look up to at all. And even it's even got worse. Worse than worse.
Exactly.
Today I'm watching. Then I thought, oh my goodness, because they've destroyed the families. Most people don't have a father to look up to, and they have such hard. There's a lot of hurt in the society that they've taken and stolen all father figures, all heroes, any savior to look up to. Here comes a politician who just like, how did he become such an amazing force? This whole society has not had any hope in so many years. It's been like the drought. And here comes a little bit of rain, and it was like, oh, it feels good. We want to go swimming.
Soaking it up, yeah. Great analogy.
Became such a, I really think that's how he got to be so amazing and still such a divisive sword, because they don't want us empowered with hope at all.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. I'm watching. I almost called you because I'm like, you got to watch this because we're going to start doing homework for the show. Whatever you want me to watch, I'll watch. I'll check it out. And I thought, maybe we'll play this game, but I'm like, nah, but I thought you had the weekend off. It was like a romantic weekend. The kids are away, so I'm like, I'll leave her alone. But I'm watching this movie last night, and it's called Funny Face, and it had Fred Astaire and Audrey Hepburn in it. And there was one part, and I'm like, oh, my God. It was like a drinking game. I go, I want you to look for how many trans women are in this show. Because back then, they hit it. And it was like I had to look up, and I had, still haven't done it. What was her name? Kay? Jesus, something. She was like the third lead in this movie. I was quite sure she was a drag queen, but nobody let on to it. She was like Eve Arden. Had that Eve Arden, Joan Crawford kind of thing going there.
Gotcha.
And then segue to Audrey Hepburn leaving the airport, which was Trans America. It's a trans. I'm like, God. She looks just like Mulvaney. Wait. She looks just like, or should I say, this Mulvaney Bud Light woman that they're having a fit about. He looks exactly to a fucking T like this shot of Audrey Hepburn in a wedding dress in the airport looking for Fred Astaire. I'm like, oh, dear God, what have they been doing to us all these years? Boom, boom, boom. But that's where they want us going. They don't want you to feel empowered and strong and hopeful that when dad comes home, everything will be okay because mom's mad. We don't have that anymore. And that's where Donald Trump is such a threat to everything because we're supposed to be helpless and be in servitude, and it's the federal government, and this is good people do what the follow the rules, for God's sakes. What's wrong with you? Can't you live in our society?
Mm-hmm.
He's such a threat, you know?
Absolutely. All right, well, we're running out of time on the first hour.
Think,
let me do the second clip. But that's, dude, we could talk the whole third hour about that. Actually, that goes kind of, in my opinion, goes along with blind casting, maybe not colorblind casting, but anyway, let's do this.
Before you move on, that short video clip that I sent proves the point of Tucker's monologue.
Yeah.
Can you just throw it out there before we start on the next one?
Yeah, I think I can. Let's see.
The war one.
Yep.
She has so much technical wizardry at her fingertips. She could do anything.
I'm telling you.
You see her motherboard? Her motherboard is just here. I am. I'm on a little phone. I'm like, I got to get a computer stand and a headphone, and I got to get my little studio going here because we are a force to be reckoned with. And now
I'm
that
telling
we can
you.
Play anything,
I'm on a desktop with a headset these days.
Are you
right?
talking about, Mom, are you talking about the destroyed seven countries in 5 years and other ones?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Just a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
Sudan.
Yeah.
And they haven't, it's not like that plan was followed perfectly to a T, but a lot of it sure was. It's like insane that this was just said. And that's not just like if we didn't have such a corrupt press, how do they not talk about that every day? Like, why does that never come up? Oh, it's like, as we fought all of these wars, no one went, but this is exactly what I heard Mr. Four-Star General tell me was your plan. And you've never come to the American people and said, this is my plan. You're just like, so what's really interesting about it, right, is it just reveals this like the way propaganda works. Because if you think about it, we start fighting the war in Afghanistan. We're in the war in Afghanistan by late 2001. It's not until 2003 we're in Iraq, right? And then it's not until 2010 that we're in Libya. 2012, we're in Syria, you know, and then in Yemen, then in all the, and it's like each time they had their own little propaganda story for why we could go into this war now. And you're like, no, motherfucker, this was always planned. You decided in 2001 you were doing this. So don't tell me this is because he's about to go genocidal, or because Saddam has weapons of mass destruction, or because Bashar al-Assad is killing his own people. It's like, no. This is just your latest little excuse now for what you already wanted to do. And that's how this shit really works, man. It's like they decide they want to fight these wars. Then they make up a bullshit excuse that they tell the American people. Then these weapon companies rake in hundreds of millions of dollars in profits, and babies get slaughtered. That's what really happens. Like, innocent men, women, and children die, get exploded to death, starved to death, get displaced. Like, it's the most evil shit in the world. And we want to think of ourselves as the good guys.
Yep, Exactly. We want to think of ourselves as the good guys. I think that's Ty, who's with us. He's just listening for now.
Oh,
press one
when.
Yeah, there we go.
Game. Sweetie, darling, welcome.
Hi, sweetie. Yes, it is me. I was just listening.
Yay. Okay. Well, we love you so much. I'm so glad you called in. We're going to do – have you been listening to the Tucker episodes on Twitter?
I haven't. I've been very removed. I've been catching tidbits of interesting things going on, but I'm like, I'm just waiting. I'm waiting to see what these so-called intellectuals have to say about it before I
– Well, Fox is doing
you know what I mean? You're like
well,
the ones that are self-proclaimed
anyway, so. Right. We've heard all of them on episode 4 now.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I do like that. That was a very good clip, though. I mean, that's the sentiment I think most people have, but I think we're a little bit, I don't want to say further along, but like we know why they're doing it. It's just, it's getting people to accept that there are people that will do that. Like they think that it has to be like a rational or a reason. And I'm like, no, they're doing it for control and they don't care who gets hurt. They don't care.
Exactly.
We have to stop leading with the premise that they care because they don't. They never did. And they would be doing it in the first place.
We kind of have to spoon feed the red pills.
We have to baby step it. So it's just like, it's starting to get people to accept the mentality of other or see from their perspective. From the perspective of like, why would they do this? Like, well, think about what they would lose if they didn't. I mean, like their reputation and their character, everything is on the line for them, especially when they're doing acts of, criminal acts, So like they have to protect themselves even more because they're criminals. So.
Absolutely. All right. I'd like to get into episode 4 and then that'll lead us right into the good news. But this is really funny. This is the last one that he did so far, episode 4. And all right, I'm going to get started with that now. 3, 2, 1.
Hey, it's Tucker Carlson. On Tuesday afternoon, the Biden administration had Donald Trump arrested. It was a pretty big news story. You may have seen it. Just before 9 p.m. that night, as part of its coverage, Fox News ran two live video feeds next to one another. On the right, Donald Trump addressed his supporters in New Jersey. On the left, Joe Biden spoke at an event for the Secretary General of NATO in Washington. Beneath those videos at the bottom of the screen, Fox's banner read this way, quote, "Wannabe dictator speaks at the White House after having his political rival arrested." Those words were up for less than 30 seconds, but the effect was immediate. Inside Fox, the women who run the network panicked. First, they scolded the producer who put the banner on the screen. Less than 24 hours after that, he resigned. He'd been at Fox for more than a decade. He was considered one of the most capable people in the building. He offered to stay for the customary 2 weeks, but Fox told him to clear out his desk and leave immediately. Then the company issued a public apology for the 27-second-long wannabe dictator line. Quote, "The Chyron was taken down immediately," Fox's PR department said, and then added ominously, it was, quote, "addressed." That was all true, but it was not enough to save Fox News from the ensuing scandal. For a time in the rest of the media, Fox's assessment of Donald Trump's arrest seemed to overshadow Trump's arrest itself. Suggesting that Biden is a dictator, declared the Washington Post, quote, "crossed the line." Alexander Vindman agreed strongly. Vindman is the perennial MSNBC guest and full-time Ukraine promoter you may remember from Russiagate. On Twitter, he demanded that the Pentagon pull Fox News from all military bases. It is, quote, "absolutely unacceptable for American Forces Network to carry programming that directly, spuriously, attacks the commander-in-chief of American Armed Forces," Vindman wrote. In other words, Joe Biden must ban all criticism of himself because that's what non-dictators do. John Cusack went further still. "For the crime of calling Biden a dictator, Fox should be shut down," wrote the 80s-era movie star. Quote, "the government has to take away their broadcasting license," and so on. It was all over the internet. Democrats were very, very angry. But why were they angry? If the banner on Fox was false, why the hysteria? Lies don't seem to bother anyone anymore. If some cable news producer had called Joe Biden a genius or accused him of being secretly Sudanese, would anyone be yelling about it? Would Fox News have apologized for it? Probably not. But calling Joe Biden a wannabe dictator, that stung. So you've got to wonder, if you're being honest with yourself, is Joe Biden a wannabe dictator? That question came up yesterday at the White House briefing. Here's how it went.
Last night, Fox News ran a chyron that referred to the president as a wannabe dictator, and I'm wondering if the White House has any comment on that.
So look, there are probably about 787 million things that I can say about this that was wrong about what we saw last night, but I don't think I'm going to get into it.
There's no comment the White House has on
it. I think I just commented.
Oh, no comment necessary. Of course Joe Biden's not a wannabe dictator. Just because he's trying to put the other candidate in prison for the rest of his life for a crime he himself committed doesn't mean he has a totalitarian impulse. Come on, that's absurd. It takes a lot more than jailing your political rivals to earn the title wannabe dictator. That's the consensus in Washington tonight. And in some ways, for once, the consensus may be right. It is not a small thing to be a wannabe dictator. It's quite a process. There are a lot of steps. First off, there is the money. The one thing that all dictators have in common is they enrich themselves and their families, their tribe, even as the countries they govern grow steadily poorer and more desperate. They take kickbacks from businesses and from other dictators. They use the official functions of their government to funnel cash to themselves. They don't bother to hide the fruits of this. They live in garish mansions with big lawns, far from the teeming cities, even as their own citizens languish in growing poverty, in some cases literally living in tents on the street. So they don't really hide it. It's all pretty blatant. And ordinary people resent it. Of course they do. And wannabe dictators know they resent it. But they don't care. There's nothing the population can do about it in a dictatorship. It's no longer possible to fight injustice in a system like that. People can't gather in large numbers to protest the rule of the dictator. If they try that, they'll be arrested by his state security services, even years after the fact. A visit from men in body armor at the breakfast table. That happens. And if citizens persist in believing they can gather in groups to protest, they may be shot to death, a bullet to the throat. And then, just to make the humiliation complete, to make the lesson gin clear to everyone else watching, their relatives can be arrested for daring to complain that their children were killed for complaining. That actually happens in some places. Ask Ashley Babbitt's mother. Here she is in handcuffs.
You murdered her inside the Capitol, now you're going to arrest her?
So don't be like Ashley Babbitt's mother, much less like poor Ashley Babbitt. She's dead now. That's the message a wannabe dictator would send. And by the way, it's not just public protest that would be banned in a dictatorship. You wouldn't be allowed to complain from your own home. Unauthorized opinions expressed on the internet would be censored. Go too far, press too deep, tell too much truth, and they'll just erase your opinions. They have no choice, really. It's a matter, as they say, of trust and safety. You must trust the leader, or else you will jeopardize his safety. Not that you really can jeopardize his safety at this point. The leader has nuclear weapons, and you don't. He'll remind you of that from time to time. And in any case, you're in the process of being disarmed anyway, along with everyone else who has shown questionable loyalty to the leader. Those who support the regime can keep their weapons and use them freely, including on public transportation. That's a core civil right for them. But for those who dissent from the program, self-defense is an unaffordable privilege. Turn in your guns, Mr. and Mrs. Peaceful Opposition. You're a danger to society, and we know who you are. And in fact, the wannabe dictator does know who they are because he knows everything. Technology has made him all-seeing. A report in Wired magazine just this week revealed that the highly non-dictatorial Biden administration is busy tracking the phones of millions of Americans without their knowledge and without bothering to get a warrant. And at the same time, the same non-dictatorial administration is stockpiling a massive trove of damaging information about these same Americans, to be used at some point, we are sure, for entirely noble purposes. So the administration now knows everything, where you spend your days, who you talk to, what you think, your porn habits. Not a big deal. The administration already knows what you buy, of course, because they've leaned on the big banks to turn over your confidential credit card information. Not because anyone here is a wannabe dictator, to be clear, but just because. It's nice to have that information, just in case, in the words of the Fox News PR department, a situation arises that needs to be, quote, addressed. It's all totally normal. It's not a dictatorship, okay? But in the end, the main reason you know Joe Biden is not a wannabe dictator is because he just does not fit the profile as a man. Dictators have that look. You know one when you see one. Dictators build cults of personality around themselves, and they use those cults to deny the glaringly obvious. In his later years, to name just one example, North Korean dictator Kim Il-sung developed an enormous baseball-sized tumor on the back of his neck. It was huge. It was grotesque. It was right there. You couldn't ignore it. You couldn't possibly not see it. But in North Korea, state media did ignore it. They pretended it didn't exist. And so, in some important sense, it didn't. If a tumor grows on a neck but no one acknowledges it, is it really there? Thankfully, nothing like that is happening in our country or ever will. If Joe Biden ever developed some profound physical or medical problem that was obvious to everybody, journalists would say something. This is not North Korea. We don't have state media here. If Joe Biden was, say, incapable of completing a full sentence, or mistook his sister for his wife, or suddenly started falling down in public for no reason, the New York Times would report on that, and then get to the bottom of what was actually happening. That would be its duty in a free country like ours. It's not like they would cover it up. The very idea of a cover-up sounds like a conspiracy theory, a dangerous one, actually, so stop it. And by the way, if Joe Biden was a wannabe dictator, he'd have the family to match. All dictators do. Saddam Hussein had Uday and Qusay. They were princelings who lived above the law, indulging their most decadent fantasies with total confidence. They would be never held to account by the police. As the sons of a dictator, they knew they could do exactly what they wanted. And so that's what they did. There's no one like that around Joe Biden. He doesn't have weird sex scandals at the heart of his family that no one in the media will ever talk about. He doesn't have a ne'er-do-well former nightclub-owning brother who's made a living for 30 years by being related to him. Not at all. That's dictator stuff. Joe Biden doesn't award ridiculous inflated titles to his relatives that the media are then required to take seriously. He doesn't call people doctor who didn't go to medical school and then force you to nod along like it's real when everyone knows it isn't. Nicolae Ceaușescu did that with his wife, Elena. Joe Biden would never do that. Nor does Joe Biden dress like a dictator. He doesn't do photo ops in mirrored sunglasses driving a sports car to convince you that he isn't frail and senile, but instead powerful, virile, and wise. That's just not his style. If Joe Biden was a dictator, he'd be wearing epaulets and carrying a tasseled riding crop, and he isn't yet, so calm down. If he was a dictator, Biden's speeches would look like Nuremberg rallies, a blood-red backdrop, armed soldiers by his side, screaming about crushing his eternal enemies. Honestly, Biden did come close to that one time last September at a speech in Philadelphia. But it wasn't in any sense dictatory. It was necessary. As MSNBC assured us at the time, quote, Biden aimed to showcase his faith in the military apparatus and its ability to back the democratic order. See, it was about democracy, not dictatorship. No cause for alarm. He is not a dictator. A dictator would stockpile ammunition for his own bureaucrats, including his tax collectors. He'd redefine the legal code to make disloyalty to the regime the most serious crime. He'd claim dominion over the most intimate parts of his citizens' lives. He'd define what attitudes they were allowed to have about sex and religion and how to raise their families. He would even, in his final grandiose stage of dictatorship, claim ownership of their children. And Joe Biden wouldn't do that. And to prove he would never do that, Biden just this week released this video.
These are our kids. These are our neighbors. Not somebody else's kids. They're all our kids. And our children are the kite strings that hold our national ambitions aloft. It matters a great deal how we treat everyone in this country. The LGBTQ Americans, especially children, you're loved, you're heard, and this administration has your back.
See? Joe Biden isn't saying your children belong to him like a dictator would. He's saying something very different from that. He's saying America's children are, quote, our children. Not his alone, ours. You share your children with Joe Biden evenly, right down the middle, with alternating weekends. You've got joint custody with Joe Biden, and you can thank heaven that you do. A nation is like a family. Every family has a head, a father. That's Joe Biden, our nation's father. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is now his fatherland. Just don't call it a dictatorship, or we'll have to issue a statement disavowing you.
All right,
was
there we
really
go.
That was a very good satirical, facetious take. It's very good. It's very well done.
But every time I heard that word, dictatory, I was like,
yeah.
I started cracking up.
Oh my God.
I did like the alternative. I did like the alternative switching between dictatorship and democracy, as if democracy means something good, which is fun. People should probably check that term. Come back.
It's a good thing we're not a democracy. We're a republic.
We're a constitution. We're a mercantile constitutional republic that is now a corporate oligarchy.
Yeah, I know. Well, so it sounds good. Sounds better than democracy.
But yeah, we're constitutional mercantile republic is what we seek to be. That was the initial founding. But people don't really understand what that means because as they're telling you to read the indictment, they haven't read the Constitution. So first they need to read that, then we can read the indictment. Let's go in order.
Yeah, do it the proper way. Yeah, especially the part that says the president has the authority to declassify every document, any document. All he has to do is touch it and say it's declassified. It's declassified. He gets to.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I was wondering, did we ever get that paper? I was kind of inquiring about that a while ago about the paperwork to be president, which you do still have to file. I've yet to see that, but I guess we can
for
assume
Biden,
that.
Yeah.
Still waiting on that paperwork anywhere.
Still waiting
at all,
on
but
that
okay.
too. Well, he's not my president, and he never will be. So
it's very strange. It's very strange. But notice how a lot of things what they do is they lead with presumption. That's kind of how they do that. So if you don't correct the presumption from the beginning, we start from a false premise, which is very interesting. I just find that very interesting. So.
That's why they keep talking about the nuclear codes. That supposedly those are the things that Donald Trump has.
Supposedly. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Okay, I got you.
Like they can't be changed. Okay. Well, I mean, maybe Biden
also,
doesn't have...
Wait, did you... Well, and also he was alternately using the word kids and children. Biden.
Yeah, I know.
You know better than that. Anyway.
Yep.
Moving on.
Yeah.
There's just a lot. I have a lot of critiques about that. I have a lot of critiques. Anyway.
Yep. He did it deliberately.
All right.
So
we've got. We're really close to the good news report. I don't want to push my luck, but I do have a Jimmy Dore here about the CDC director. Mom, do you
so that's a lead-up because I'm going to talk about COVID and where we're at this point. So if you want to do Walensky, that's fine with me.
Okay, let's do that right now then. 3, 2, 1.
I want to show you this because Walensky went and lied in front of Congress again. And I just want to remind people of the lies that they told.
There is a clear message that is coming through. This is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
And we're seeing it in the data. Unvaccinated Americans account for virtually all recent COVID-19 hospitalizations and deaths.
We still...
So they're lying. So that was always a lie.
Was that rehearsed, saying that they all repeated? You're telling me that was not there from their heart?
So the CDC director was asked about this because at the time they were saying this, they were lying and they knew it. And so let's just watch.
On June 21, 2021, President Biden stated, quote, "If you are vaccinated, you're not going to be hospitalized. You are not going to be in the intensive care unit. You are not going to die," end quote. Again, simply yes or no. By that date, were there vaccinated Americans that were hospitalized?
What I can tell you is at the time, CDC was releasing increasing data showing the immense protection of vaccines against severe disease, hospitalization, and death.
But by that date, were there vaccinated Americans that were hospitalized?
Maybe I will say this. We still, to this day, do not have data on people who are coming into the hospitals who are vaccinated. That
what?
Is a data point that we have lacked.
Well, I like how she answered that. Well, maybe I'll say this. Maybe I'll give you that. So if that doesn't enrage you, I don't know what's wrong with you. Because that's the CDC director smirking, being glib while being questioned by the people's representative in Congress. And she's lying.
Well, Jimmy, as you know, I'm a diehard liberal myself. And, I would rather – you have to understand, when you're a diehard liberal, I spend all my time campaigning for Joe Biden's reelection on every facet of everything. So if I said anything, it could potentially damage – the greater good is make sure Trump's not back, not anything with your health.
But what – she couldn't even answer a straight question. The straight question is, did you – well, here it is again. Let me.
On June 21, 2021, President Biden stated, quote, if you are vaccinated, you're not going to be hospitalized. You are not going to be in the intensive care unit. You are not going to die, end quote. Again.
That was a lie. That was always a lie. And I just showed you video of her saying that lie. And now his direct question is...
simply yes or no. By that date, were there vaccinated Americans that were hospitalized?
Were there vaccinated Americans that were hospitalized? Seems like a yes or no question. Here's what she says.
What I can tell you is at the time, CDC was releasing increasing data showing the immense protection of vaccines against severe...
She just answered a different question. That's not the question. The question wasn't, did you guys release data that said the vaccine saved a lot of lives? The question was, were there people hospitalized who were vaccinated at the time of that statement?
You know,
so when you kept running around saying it was the pandemic of the unvaccinated, that was a lie. That's what's going on here. And she first just blatantly doesn't answer the question. She says that, which wasn't the question. Here it is. What?
You know what it is also? They all, the Rachel Maddow defense of like,
yeah,
of course no one thought it was definitely going to work just because we said it. That's
right.
A sparkly story.
Right.
We just said anything to get you to take.
That's right.
Disease, hospitalization, and death.
But by that date, were there vaccinated Americans that were hospitalized?
Were there vaccinated Americans that were hospitalized? You're the head of the CDC. I know you have this data. They ask everybody. Here we go.
Maybe I will say this.
Maybe.
We still, to this day, do not have data on people who are coming into the hospitals who are vaccinated. That is a data point that we have lacked.
That's a lie. You do not lack that data point. You might have erased that data point, but don't act like you guys haven't collected that data point. So here's what this... this is such a blatant lie. I had to have a few stitches on my hand from woodworking. The first question asked by the hospital was if I was vaccinated. You know damn well they were collecting the data but stopped reporting it when it didn't align with their narrative. we're seeing it. There's no data. Kurt, I don't know if you know that. Maybe we'll have those data points in 75 years. But don't we all look better on camera now? Why wait till... meanwhile, let's all go have some mimosas and laugh at the pores, shall we?
Yeah, and maybe get another booster while we're at it. Wear a mask and so forth.
We're definitely going to see the data someday. But she's saying there isn't that data.
Well, they ask it, and then I guess they don't write it down. We tell them.
Right.
They're just asking, you know, making small talk.
Has it become so stigmatized that we all got to double talk like we're part of a special access program to hide UFOs for every goddamn topic that there is? Well, what I say is we don't have the data. Maybe what I'll say is we don't have the data. Maybe I'll say this. What kind of... I don't have the balls to answer a question like that in front of Congress.
Well, I don't either, but I never made $40 billion for Big Pharma myself, so I don't feel the kind of, you know,
so what
protection.
So what she's saying, Kurt, is that people went in and they were dying of COVID. And the doctor asked, well, did you get vaccinated? And when the patient sometimes said yes, the doctor said, no shit, and then just forgot about it.
Wow, you hear something new every day. How about that? He went, how about that?
You're sick of COVID and dying from it, and you tell me you're vaccinated. Isn't that an interesting tidbit? I wonder if someone's writing that down somewhere.
Well, I'm getting off topic. Let's get back to your COVID.
Yeah, let's get back to your COVID. Here's interesting. This is from This is from October of 2021.
It's really important. Obviously, this issue of maintaining immunity, I think we've not seen the urgency that we need to see, and particularly the vulnerable, to get them re-immunized. I hear a lot of times people feel it's a rare event that fully vaccinated people may die. I happen to be the senior advisor to Governor Hogan in the state of Maryland. In the last 6 to 8 weeks, more than 40% of the people that died in Maryland were fully vaccinated.
What's that? He's saying this to tell you to get a booster, too, by the way. He's not saying this against the vaccine.
He's not saying this against the
vaccine. Effective vaccine that I support.
That's right.
He's just saying get a boost. She could have said that. Well, if you don't get boosted, we told you to get boosted. She didn't even say that.
She didn't even say that. She said, we don't even know.
We don't have the data.
We don't have that data.
Does she not know this guy?
Why do you think they don't have that data? A, they have that data. B, she's lying that they don't have that data because that data would not support their narrative about the vaccines. That's why she's lying. You hear what that guy just said? That was the former head of the CDC. And he was saying that 40% of the people he saw dying were vaccinated.
Colin Powell dies of fully vaccinated.
And, and that's from October of 2021. Here we are in June of 2023, almost 2 years later. And that CDC director is giving that bullshit answer to Congress. That doesn't enrage you? None of my comedian friends, still not one question about, they're such cowards, Kurt. Not one question. You go in to watch them do comedy now, all those people who are wagging their finger at you for not wanting to get vaccinated, for having questions about lockdowns and masks and COVID, but those comedians, they're all doing jokes about dating now. I'm not kidding.
What's done is done, Jimmy. Move on. I believe a German man said that at the Nuremberg trials. I believe a great German once said, what's done is done.
Where are all those comedians with all those goddamn great COVID jokes about shitting on people for trying to get informed? And now you see them do comedy and they're talking about dating.
Well, now we luckily masked our way out of the pandemic. Yeah. We can date again.
Anyway, so there you go. And I'm saying that the vaccine is safe and effective, Kurt. You know that.
I'm mad at her for not saying, well, yeah, you got to get a booster.
Of course.
Because that's an easy, easy, correct response to a simple question that I would have said as a person that fully supports vaccine, not some anti-vax loon.
So if Trump gets indicted for moving documents, why isn't she indicted for not having that data that you know they have?
Because she did her job?
Yes. Wanda Sykes famously said that when you go to the dentist, they ask you if you had an abortion.
They do?
But all the vaccine shit went into recycling somehow.
Wait.
Wanda Sykes said that.
A dentist never asked me if I had an abortion. Never even asked my gender either.
Never even asked my gender.
They don't say that to dentists, do they?
I've never had
that. That's if you're getting like put under anesthesia or something.
So they got every piece of data on you, Kurt. Right?
They
track us.
Right.
They watch. They know what kind of socks I want to buy.
They've been watching me jack off for the last 20 years.
They listen in on all your phone conversations, your texts. They monitor our thermostats. They know which corporate puppet we're watching on late night. But somehow our medical information disappears. Oopsie daisy. The medical information that doesn't support their narrative of COVID, somehow it just disappears.
Oh, well, maybe China has it. That's what I'm worried
about.
Maybe they got it with that balloon.
Okay. But of course, you know, the vaccine is safe and effective.
Yeah.
And it saved millions of lives, keeps you from becoming seriously ill or hospitalized.
It slowed the spread of Colin Powell dying of it.
Slowed the spread of Colin Powell. He would have died faster.
Colin Powell would have spread faster.
All those people who died of COVID after vaccination, they would have died faster.
Look, the point of the vaccine was not to keep you from dying. I know people selfishly want to think that. It was to vaccinate hospitals against you clogging them up with your poor people bullshit.
Imagine if you got the polio vaccine, three of them, and then you got polio and died. Can you imagine that?
I believe that happened to the very first people who got the, you know.
I know, because it was a bad batch.
They made a bad batch.
Yeah.
That was the birth. Why would anybody not hesitate about vaccines? It's a miracle thing. It's because the very first batch, not the drug, the invention's great.
Yeah.
The company that made it actually put a live virus in.
Yeah.
And created a little bit of distrust. And ever since then, that's what we got. And I learned that from somebody trying to debunk Trump rushing a vaccine. Not a Trump site.
Right.
That's the thing that, because, you know, the other thing, okay, that doesn't jog me. The fact the guy writing it, who I think we've shown on here later talking about how only an asshole would be anti-vax, he was at the time to criticize Trump for warp speed.
Yeah, he was saying that we should be
cautious.
Hey, there's
a reason some people are
cautious.
That was the most shocking part of the article.
Well, when Trump was developing the COVID vaccine under warp speed, Kamala Harris said she wasn't going to take it. Joe Biden said he would wait to hear from all the experts.
Transparent, he said.
Yeah, it's got to be transparent. It was never transparent. They didn't release the data. They still haven't released all the data.
Well, it's a pandemic.
It's a
That's the excuse for not releasing the JFK stuff. It's a pandemic.
I don't know if I'll ever get over my rage at my comedian friends over COVID.
Well, Jimmy, I don't want to sound like your mom, but they probably weren't really your friends.
Hey, come see us live on...
All right, there we go.
The key being the last part he said. They were not your friends. Moving on.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like your mom, but they probably weren't your friends.
They probably weren't.
Yeah.
Most likely.
I just want to say that the next time we decide to play America, the interns have to sit in the way back. They can't participate. That's my opinion on that.
Indeed.
They truly don't fucking know. It's not that they're lying. They don't fucking know. They're not required to know. I want 20 years experience before you're put in any place of power at all. But that's just me. Get off my grass, too. But
yeah, that's a good requirement. All right, let's get into the good news. Mom, are you ready?
I am. So today, the reason why I decided to do COVID is because on a site that I visit quite often, which I want to give a hat tip always when I use people's stuff, is a site called Twitchy. Twitchy is an aggregator of hot topics, I suppose is a way to say it, on Twitter. And it comes obviously from the conservative bent. But this morning up popped something about a gentleman named Joe Rogan, who has been controversial to say the least, because he actually started speaking out about COVID. And he was, you know, he talked about ivermectin. And if you remember back when things were so hot that you weren't allowed to say the I word on any site, you would be immediately, or the E word or the M word or the C, or the V word. You weren't allowed to say any of it, which is anathema to me. So I'm 61 years old, and you guys are a little more sanguine than I guess. I might not even be saying that right. Sanguine than I am. I still believe in this country.
That's correct.
Sanguine.
I haven't heard that term in a while. But
I believe in this country. I believe in our constitutional republic. I am a fire-breathing patriot. I love my flag. I love my country. The whole business, okay? Yes. My belief in the government has been nullified. My belief in the medical community has been nullified. My belief in just about every story that was a big story has been nullified. Okay? And I take just about everything I hear with a grain of salt now, which is probably pretty healthy. It's sad, but it's healthy.
Well, I think it's great. It's called discernment, and we need to have a lot more of it.
And I suppose I've always thought that I did have it, Ty. Okay, and it saddened me to learn that many of the things that I believed about our country and our government. Because really, it's not our country. It's the globalist freaking lizard people that are running the show.
Well, exactly. So actually, this should give you hope, because that means that this is not naturally like this. It's being artificially designed, which means we can fix it. And that's the best hope we can have. As opposed to Orwell's warning, which was a totalitarian state that is so bad that it encompasses everything. And there's, you know, at the end of 1984, there is no solution. They just take everything and it's done. So but that's not what's happening. So that gives me hope. That gives me a lot of hope.
Thank you for saying that, because I still am my heart is still beating properly with love for this country. I just think we need to take the government down piece by piece and start over. Okay.
Well, and the thing is, that's the whole thing, is that they're trying to lower our morale. They want us to give up morale. So if we give up morale,
you know,
that's how they beat us. So we can't do that.
That.
We can't do it.
Right. Yeah. Elizabeth alluded to that today, and I thought it was very prescient what she said. So take us back to when COVID was at its hottest, and it never really was, actually. That's the point I'm trying to make, is that the people that were like, hey, wait a minute, there is such a thing as natural immunity. How on earth? I never heard of nothing called asymptomatic spread. Wait a minute. If somebody says there's a medicine that might work, how come we can't talk about it and ask questions? Okay. So I remember thinking that. I remember hearing stories about that it came from a lab, and they wouldn't let us talk about that either. Then when the vaccines came out, and again, this was my president that ran it through warp speed, and I was proud of him, because that never happens. So, you know, that getting something through that fast, and of course I was a little squidgy, but by God, it was my president, because he was trying to save lives. Okay, all of that was still all true, and I'm excuse me for coughing in my microphone, I apologize. But at the height of it, there were these so-called experts that would rage and scream and yell and say, you can't question the science. The science is settled. And I remember thinking, well, that's just about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. There is no such thing as settled science, the scurvy, slimy, scum-sucking dogs. Now I know they're trying to pull a fast one on me, and I'm telling you, I got mad. I will never trust the medical community again, ever, giving this vaccine to pregnant women when they can't even eat tuna fish. Okay, taking a breath. One of the people that was these so-called experts on Twitter that made it to where people's accounts were being shut down left and right. We're talking about millions of people that were not allowed to speak, was a gentleman named Professor Peter Hotz, H-O-T-Z-E, M-D, Ph-D, called himself a vaccine specialist. He was a vaccine specialist. I'm looking at a picture of him on my screen, and he's got a lab coat on with Pfizer, Moderna, BioNTech, and big logos of these pharmaceutical companies all over, and he's got this big creepy freaking smile on his face standing in front of a microscope.
Is that kind of like when race cars get painted with logos?
Like that. That's exactly like it, when you get bought and paid for. Okay.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Here we go. Yeah. Brought to you by Pfizer. We've all heard a lot about Professor Peter Hotz.
I was going to say, actually, or when movie stars wear designer clothing. It's the same thing.
Yes. Yes. Ooh, just like that. Okay.
Just saying. Just throwing that out there. Anyway.
As a vaccine specialist this morning, since you know he pushed for Spotify to censor Joe Rogan over his commentary on vaccines, specifically the COVID vaccine. He also seems very perturbed about what RFK Jr. had to say on the topic. So I'm going to switch just real quick. I wanted to just set it up about a story that that started up this morning, where Joe Rogan went on, brought RFK Jr. on his show, and apparently this guy Hotzi was pissed off that how dare that Joe Rogan allow him to speak on his show. And because all of his theories are dangerous and they will kill people. Joe Rogan went on to say that if you believe that, he went back at the guy. Now, he didn't tag him in the tweet. He just started talking crap about Joe Rogan. Okay. Joe Rogan went back at him and said, if you have the evidence to support what you're saying, that the things that RFK Jr. are saying are incorrect or false, come on my show and debate him. This guy shrieked and howled and called Joe Rogan an anti-Semite, which is this is how they do it. Okay, they don't debate. They never will. They refuse to debate. And when someone calls them out, they run away and hide, shrieking and howling about how they're in danger and being attacked.
This is why you don't argue with donkeys.
That's why you don't argue with donkeys, but Joe Rogan's not arguing.
It's a famous fable. It's a famous tale. People should look that up. Don't argue with donkeys.
Don't argue with donkeys.
Or don't cast pearls among swine.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. Because people who are criticizing you aren't doing better than you. That's why they're doing so. People that are doing better than you don't have time. It's really that simple.
So this is Professor Howitz, God bless him. Spotify has stopped even sort of trying to stem Joe Rogan's vaccine misinformation. It's really true. And Anna Merlan is at Anna Merlan. It's some Twitter rando. Is just awful. And from all the online attacks I'm receiving about after this absurd podcast, it's clear many people actually believe this nonsense. So you can't call him out. It's an attack. Okay. Joe Rogan came back at him, even though he wasn't tagged in the post. He said, Peter, if you claim what RFK Jr. is saying is misinformation, I'm offering you $100,000 to the charity of your choice if you're willing to debate him on my show with no time limit. It's an opportunity. He came back. Joe, you have my cell, my email. I'm always willing to speak with you. So, which is not him saying that he'd come on the show. And Joe Rogan called him out. He said, this is a non-answer. I challenge you publicly because you publicly quote tweeted and agreed with that dog shit Vice article. If you're really serious about what you stand for, you now have a massive opportunity for debate that will reach the largest audience, a discussion. I have to go to the tweet. Sorry. A discussion like this has ever had. If you think someone else is better qualified, suggest that person. So the guy said, came back again and said, I'm not going to do it because I'll be attacked. Okay. Okay. So I set the stage. During the day, I'm asking you clearly if you're willing to come on to debate Robert Kennedy Jr. They went on and on. They put up they're up to a couple of million dollars for the charity of this guy's choice. Elon Musk put up $100,000. A bunch of people said, come on and debate. They won't do it for the exact same reason why we just heard Walensky. They don't. They do have the data. They have deep sixed it so far. They never collected data about the other side of this discussion. They refuse to do it. What we can get our hands on has been censored and hidden. Okay. And we are still at the very beginning of this. They have been lying about this cold since day one. And millions of people did die from this cold, no question about it, because it was a bad cold. It was a bad virus, but millions of people die from the flu virus every year. And as a matter of fact, at its very height, the same amount of people died from this flu virus as every other year. And every day there's a new story about the things that they told us are turning out to be true. Asymptomatic spread was very rare. Natural immunity is the very best immunity. The vaccines were ineffective and dangerous. They told us just the opposite, highly effective and safe. They have lied to us.
As to say that asymptomatic spread is non-existent.
They use the word very rare, okay, that which means non-existent.
Yeah, Danielle saw through that code very quickly. You mean non-existent.
Yeah, that's exactly what it means. But do you remember them trying to tell us that? You have to stay away from everyone that you love, and that you can't leave your neighborhood, and you can't go outside, and you can't go to the beach and check your children, so we're shutting down the schools. Come to find out, little kids were not vectors. Little kids didn't get sick. Little kids had the virus and never even showed any symptoms. They were just they may have been a slight cough a nasal drip. Okay, it was ridiculous. And,
it was none of those narratives, right? I mean, it avoids Walmart and the homeless and drinker. Like, come on, that's not how disease works, people. It's just not.
Yep.
It's just different factually. I don't know how to be more logical than that. So
it had to be. So we still are at the beginning of the question. Why? Who? When? And I will tell you.
How?
Lots of people pushing for amnesty lately over the COVID fiasco. I knew COVID was a scam the very second it started being drummed up in the media in California of January 2020, when the Chinese were pushing phony propaganda with people keeling over in public. I knew it was political.
Remember that? Those videos of people
and even,
keeling over in the street? Like, what?
Sure do.
It was over
sure do remember that.
Election.
Sure do.
With people keeling over in public, I knew it was political, and even though I was not a publicly known person at the time, expressed that in my tiny social media bubble and took a lot of heat for it. After they shut the world down in mid-March, I decided to try and be empathetic, something I'm not great at. My dad probably
would
have...
Who is the author of this?
Seth Cashel, Captain K.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna give him credit at the end. Even though I was not a publicly known person at the time, expressed that in my tiny social media bubble and took a lot of heat for it. After they shut the world down in mid-March, I decided to try and be empathetic, which is exactly what I did. Oh, my gosh. You know, this is scary. The little old people, right? It was sad. What about the kids? They scared the F out of the entire freaking world over a GD election. I'm not great at it, says Seth Cashel. My dad probably would have suffered or died from COVID given his heavy mileage from his military years. So I recruited an army of kids to help everyone in my neighborhood, which had a very old population. I emailed everyone, anything you need, let us know. We'll go to whatever store that is and pick it up and bring it to you, and you can pay us back then. Not one single person took us up on that, with dozens of people over the age of 75 having received that offer. COVID was and is and always will be a scam and a conspiracy that has given the hardest shove yet to personal liberties and freedoms, and there shall be no amnesty for the human scum that perpetuated that lie. So who?
Yeah, very well stated. Very well stated.
Right. Here you have it, folks.
Very well stated.
Not Pfizer or Moderna, but the U.S. government pioneered mRNA. DARPA, U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, began investigating in gene-encoded vaccines in 2012. In other words, the military came up with the idea of messenger RNA vaccines, not Pfizer or Moderna. This is a military program. England, Germany, Western countries went absolutely insane, but they kept calling it an opportunity. 1 week after leaked text, the UK Health Minister, Matt Hancock, spreads fear on national television as he deploys the new variant. Remember the new variant? And frightens the pants out of everyone.
Omicron, the Transformer.
The new variant is out of control. It's important for everybody to act like they might have the virus. The cases, as you've seen from the graphs, have absolutely rocketed in the last few days. Given how much faster this new variant spreads, it will be very difficult to keep it under control until we have the vaccine rolled out. Then there's Fauci, which we can say over and over and over again, that this man lied to the American people. He was supposed to be, the science, okay? And if there's one thing that I would love to just, shake Donald Trump like a grandma lady and holler at him for letting these people steamroller him, I doubt if he felt like he had a choice at the time.
Yeah, he didn't.
He didn't at all.
And I like to refer to Fauci as Fauci the Christmas Poo.
That's exactly who he is.
I do want to stay, but I do actually have to go. because I'm like out and about. But I wanted to tune in for a minute and just I love you. Thank you guys for having me. I'll try to be back next time. But there's one takeaway that I took from that, the thing with Joe Rogan. The reason, there's a lot of reasons why I think they didn't want to do it, but also he's a very large platform and a lot of following, and a lot of people would like to ride the coattails of other people.
Yeah.
And so jealousy is a thing. But what did he do? It gave him a lot of attention, didn't it? He got a lot of attention from that. And that's why he did it.
He wanted attention. He's still on Twitter crying, saying that he's being attacked
So maybe that was his main goal, was to get a legion of people to then follow him through Joe Rogan's coattails. So be wary of that. Be wary of, like, challenging people or going – because certain people are only there so that they can get popularity through you. That's a lot of what that is. So just be cautious.
That's why he didn't tag him in the post.
Of course not. Yeah. Of course not. And that's why they offered him money and all the things he wanted. He wanted all those things, but they didn't accept the offer because you didn't want the offer. You wanted attention.
Exactly what he wanted.
That's what it is.
Absolutely.
People's motivation. Don't believe what people say they'll do. Believe what they do. Not what they say they'll do. It's very different. It's very distinctly different. So.
Yep.
That's the note I'm leaving with.
Bless you, beloved. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next week, okay?
Yes, I love you guys. Love you, Robin. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you. Okay, bye.
Okay. So I don't know if you guys know this. On the 12th of March, there was a vote in the House.
Did you finish your article?
I'm still talking about it. I'm going all the way through.
Gotcha.
I'm going all the way through as to the reasons why we're in this place. Where Seth Cashel said no amnesty for these people. On the 12th of March, they voted to declassify all of the COVID information. It was lacking Biden's signature at the time. It looks like then that same day that he signed it. But we still don't have the information.
This is
Josh
origin,
Hawley wrote to the Chinese
about, right?
president after CCP threatened CCP minions threatened to kill him. Okay, so we're still waiting. We're still waiting to get that information. It was all supposedly declassified, but you notice it keeps leaking out. More and more organizations are saying, yeah, it was a lab leak, and they still are using the word accident. I doubt it. So throughout the entire process, kept telling us that the first death was in January, maybe February of 2020. But now we're looking like CDC's got data that the first infection was in November of 2019. It's going back even further.
September.
Yeah. September, October. No. Yeah. Right.
Santa Clarita found it in their sewage system as early as September
2019.
Yeah.
Yes. Apparently, they're investigating whether there were two lab leaks for COVID instead of just one. Okay. So the ethical skeptic in April 20th said IFR was 0.26, not 4%. 2020 prior immunity in the Asia Pacific and in Africa. China concealed COVID in 2019. There were two viruses, older and Wuhan. So that he's backing up with this Senate GOP reports or saying the evidence that they have that there were two viruses. Excess death signal inflected in April of 2021. Cancer signal emerged after April 2021. In any science, these would be legendary findings. So not only did the DOD release the virus on purpose, then they tried to kill us with the vaccine. The military has had this vaccine since 2012, and now we have excess death. We've never had excess death before after the vaccine. see. So some of this I've already shared, the Fauci Pharma drops. I went all the way back to my COVID scam in my COVID scam folder. So it may seem a little disjointed today, but I do want to point out the most recent one. So I told you they keep dropping love about it, finally admitting that the virus came from a lab, even though they fought like wild beasts to prevent us from hearing the truth. And so this is an article from June 11th. Scientists working at Wuhan Institute of Virology alongside Chinese military were combining world's most deadly coronaviruses to create mutant strain capable of sparking a pandemic just before the COVID outbreak began. Investigators say COVID-19 was developed through a series of risky experiments. The virus was leaked from the Wuhan lab and covered up due to its military links. Scientists, that's just the headline. Scientists at the Wuhan Institute of Virology were running risky experiments to create deadly mutant coronaviruses by fusing newly discovered strains just before the outbreak of COVID-19. U.S. investigators believe COVID-19 was created by scientists at the Wuhan lab through experiments on similar coronaviruses discovered in a mine shaft in southern China. Researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology were fusing deadly coronaviruses to create highly infectious mutant strains that were then used to infect albino mice, the U.S. investigators claim. So this is the part where they get to still say it was an accident. Somehow those little mices escape. The research program was kept secret and covered up due to its being funded by the Chinese military with the aim of developing bioweapons. The secret initiative in turn led to the creation of COVID-19, which was then leaked into the city of Wuhan through a lab accident, there it is, before it spread across the globe, the U.S. investigators claim. The Wuhan laboratory had initially set out to discover the origins of the deadly SARS virus that first broke out in southern China in 2002. However, the research institute soon became engaged in increasingly risky experiments on coronaviruses that were taken from caves in southern China. The Wuhan lab initially made all of its findings public and claimed its research was necessary to develop coronavirus vaccines. The institute's position, however, shifted in 2016. What happened in 2016? Pop quiz.
Oh, me.
Pick. Go.
Me. Hand up. Trump became president.
Donald motherfucking Trump happened in 2016. You're absolutely correct. The institute's position, however, shifted in 2016 when researchers from the Wuhan Institute discovered a new coronavirus, really, in a mine shaft in Mojiang, Yunnan, near China's border with Laos. The coronavirus that was discovered in the Mojiang mine shaft is understood to be the only member of COVID-19's immediate family to have existed prior to the pandemic. Chinese authorities, however, failed to report fatalities linked to the new coronavirus that was discovered in Mojiang. They didn't mine shaft. Instead, the mine shaft viruses were taken back to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where researchers launched a classified research program, investigators say. Another pop quiz. Where did they get the money?
Oh, me.
Okay.
Unless Elizabeth wants the honors. No?
She
okay.
Might be
all right,
food.
Me, hands up. I'm going to say Anthony Fauci as head of NIH.
You're supposed to say your mom.
Oh,
got it from my MFing tax dollars, the scurvy, slimy, scum-sucking dogs. Okay.
All right. I'm going to take a C on that one. I did not get an A or a B.
Your mom. You got it from your mom. Okay. So I'm going to go finally and end the COVID part, and then I'm going to read something from Archbishop Pagano for my final of the day. So clandestine, here we go again, He's on Twitter, and I'm sure this is probably his ninth account. He's on there as @WarClandestine, because everybody believes that we're at war.
Somebody sent him the $8 to get a check mark.
He got one.
Woot!
He's got a check mark. I know. I'm thinking about getting one myself, just because there's an election coming up. But having said that, Clandestine has been around for a very long time. He was one of the people I followed back before we all got killed. And he's taking a look at COVID today. He says, well, he's taking a look from a 40,000 foot view. He even says that. Let's take it to 40,000 feet. But he right now on Twitter. On Twitter 1.0, the vaccine skeptics would have been suspended already, and all this truth would have been yanked for COVID disinformation. So he's taking a look at what's going on with RFK. He's taking a look at what's going on with Joe Rogan, with the lab leak theories, the vaccines, Walensky, all of it. And your buddy Jimmy Dore, as a matter of fact, too. On Twitter 1.0, the vaccine
skeptics... And Jimmy Dore obviously follows him, I'm just saying.
Probably. Would have been suspended already, and all this truth would have been yanked for COVID disinformation. They tried to prevent us from knowing. Do you recognize Elon's importance now? Because he went back at that guy as well. He said, we need to talk about this stuff. We don't do that anymore because the guy wanted Rogan taken down. Okay? And Elon Musk said, that's the end of that. Get on there and debate him. And I'll put up $100,000 in the pot to your favorite charity. So Clandestine says, do you recognize Elon's importance now? The medical establishment failed to grasp the severity of their situation. Either they show us the data they claim they had, Walensky, showing the shots were safe and effective, or they committed crimes against humanity and violated the Nuremberg Code. Punishment is death. 10 reasons COVIDians need to shut up. STFU. Vaccines are safe and effective. Natural immunity does not exist. Masks work. Lockdowns work. Ivermectin is horse paste. HCQ is bleach. BLM riots are safe. Church and school is dangerous. COVID-19 did not come from the lab. The science is settled. Then he did a great meme. We are the party of science, and the meme says, then defend your assertions and show us your data. They have a face, like, no. The leftist response to my tweets are mind-boggling. They have adopted and regurgitate the same narrative that debate is not necessary in defending their assertions is against conspiracy theorists, which is what that doctor did. Well, I don't have to defend my assertions because you guys are conspiracy theorists. Is beneath them. Mass formation mental gymnastics with a large side of cope. The left's RFK anti-vax rhetoric is dangerous and has easily been debunked the left. RFK's Jr.'s anti-vax rhetoric is dangerous and has been easily debunked many times. Rogan, I'll give $1 million to the charity of your choice to debunk him in front of the largest podcast audience on the planet, the left. They disappear. The medical establishment and the subservient COVIDians don't understand. You all declared with the utmost certainty that the jabs were safe and effective. You were wrong. You are not in an intellectually or morally superior position. It's time for all of you to take a seat. For all the know-it-alls in the comments telling me it's $100,000, that was the original offer. Others have pitched in to raise the pot. It was at $860,000 when I posted, and Tim Pool added another $100,000, bringing it up to $960,000. Plus, others have said they will pitch in. So they're up to $1 million now, and for this guy to debate his positions, or he said, or anyone, just come on in. Let's debate this. That
yeah,
has
or
been
somebody
the problem
who knows better. Somebody
yeah.
who knows more than this doctor, right?
Right. So that's what he told that doctor. He says, if you don't want to do it, he goes, suggest someone who you who has the information that you assert. And by asserting it, saying that we're all conspiracy theorists and that we're wrong. I know I've been saying this for a long time. This is coming to a head, Keshel. There is no amnesty for what these people have done. They killed millions of people over an election. And there is no amnesty, only Nuremberg trials. They must be made to pay for what they did to us.
Absolutely.
And I will die happy when I see it happen.
So I just went to an RFK rally. I had some misgivings about it because I didn't, you know, I don't want to support Democrats, right? And you know,
he is running as a Dem, I know. Yeah.
Yep. So the person he brought on, you know, as his open was Del Bakery. And I guess this is part of a stump speech because I've heard it a few times now. But Del Bigtree's story about how him and RFK Jr. sat at a huge table at the CDC with Anthony Fauci present, talking about the MMR vaccination. And
right.
They, you know, so they basically said to, you know, politely said, can we have the studies? Like, you know, let's see your controlled studies as science dictates.
I remember this.
Yeah. And you know, the CDC says, of course we've got them. Great, says RFK.
Let's see them.
Bring them to us. We would like to see them. They're not available. And it was a very, like, uncomfortably long pause. And Fauci speaks up and says, it would have been dangerous to not vaccinate everyone because basically the risk of measles, mumps, and rubella was so killing so many people that we could
didn't do a study.
Do a control group study. There was no control group in any of these vaccines. MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. There were no control groups done. And that right there is enough to invalidate all of the science that the government has for vaccines.
MMR. Obviously, they don't even have it. And let me just tell you something. In the comments underneath the Rogan kerfluffle are about 500 moms wailing over their children with autism.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. This has been a long time coming, and we're almost there, you guys.
I'm gonna
do a little bit of a switch to a different topic as I close. By it's Archbishop Vigano, which I know Lily loves this guy. And he is going at the Catholic Church like he's been doing for years now, but this time for its activism on the LGBTQ movement. So Archbishop Vigano said, he calls on all faithful Catholics to remove the service of the Antichrist from the sacred precincts. Wow. He released a letter warning about Pride Mass to be celebrated today at the Holy Trinity Parish in Washington, D.C. Vigano also names D.C. Cardinal Wilton Gregory as a promoter of the homosexualist agenda. Today at Holy Trinity Parish, run by the Jesuits of Georgetown University and the Archdiocese of Washington, a Mass will be celebrated for Catholic activists of the LGBTQ movement. For years, ever since he was the Archbishop of Atlanta, Wilton Daniel Gregory has been abusing his power to promote the homosexualist agenda, much to the scandal of the Catholic faithful. His monomaniacal fixation on the vice against nature earned him the sacred purple, i.e. the cardinalate, and appointments to the See of Washington, D.C., a worthy heir to McCarrick and Wuerl, thus confirming that betrayal of Christ's teaching is regarded in Bergoglio's Vatican as a prerequisite for an ecclesiastical career. It is not surprising that Cardinal Gregory is a follower of James Martin, S.J. What does the S.J. stand for? I can't remember. Whose recent sacrilegious remarks on devotion to the Sacred Heart have aroused indignation in the ecclesial body and prompted the organization of a reparatory procession on June 16th at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles. It brings me great sorrow to learn that the clergy of the Archdiocese of Washington prefer to remain slavishly silent to this umpteenth sacrilege in which the Holy Sacrifice is sacrilegiously used as a propaganda tool for a sin that cries out for vengeance before God, while the souls of so many poor sinners are confirmed in vice. But even greater is the pain of seeing the most blessed sacrament profaned during the octave of Corpus Christi and 2 days before the Feast of the Most Sacred Heart of Jesus by admitting to communion people whom pastors should instead admonish and direct towards a path of true conversion and fidelity to God's will. So Archbishop Vigano is speaking on another, I suppose, kerfluffle is the right word. The Los Angeles Dodgers, for their Pride Month celebration, invited an organization called the the Church of Perpetual Indulgence, which is a bunch of people who dress up in drag as nuns and priests, nuns most of them, with outlandish makeup. They use a condom for the Eucharist. They use our symbols and signs of our faith in a way that, excuse me, is blasphemous. And so they invited them, and the Catholics stood up and said, this is wrong. These people are bigots. They talk about Christians in a nasty, horrible, wicked way, and you should disinvite them. It's not okay for us to be disrespected like that. A lot of the players stood up and said, these people are bigots, and we should not be celebrating the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence at our... The Los Angeles Dodgers disinvited them and said, hey, we hear that, you know, the people are pretty upset. Of course, they rained hell on the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they cowered and reinvited them. So what Archbishop Vigano was talking about, they had a demonstration. A lot of the players stood up. They did a march in front of Dodger Stadium. Dodgers like, okay, well, we're going to have a day of faith and family for you. It wasn't enough. They are trying to ruin, back to your original point, Elizabeth, everything we believe in. Up is down, right is left. Everything that we hold dear and sincerely, which is our faith in Christ, celebrating the Eucharist, all of it. And they want to destroy everything we have and everything we believe in our faith, in our country, in our family. And I, for one, am tired of it. The good news is that God is still sitting on his throne, and he could care less about the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. He might want to have a word with them when they die. God forbid.
You know,
may they find him now, in the name of Jesus.
I can't.
Amen.
You're better than us. I can only think of Father Guido Sarducci.
Don't you love him? Yeah. Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Yeah. But they, Elizabeth, I know everybody thinks they're really, really cutesy, but if you go and look at some of the things that they say about Christians, you would be breathing fire like I am right now, and like Archbishop Vigano is right now. These people are nasty, wicked, bigots. And I pray for them a lot because may they find Jesus now in the name of Jesus because they're just a freaking disaster.
It's shameful.
FJ,
I believe it's Sacred Jesuit, I believe. The Sacred Effect of Jesuits.
Yes, that's the one that guy got promoted to, that Archbishop Vigano was so exercised over. Okay, I got to go feed my chickens. I got to go feed my dog. Peace be upon you. Okay, but before I go, a couple of things. I posted on Seeds of Change the thread. We got a full crop of cherries this year. The new babies are in the brooder. I think we ended up with 25, and then we put out 6 outside, the grown-up, into the grow-out. And so it looks like I'm going to have replenish my flock this year after last year's disaster. The peaches are almost ripe. Give them another 2 weeks. The blackberries are slow this year.
No sun.
Yeah, it's because of the sun. I know. But we're going to have a bumper crop, which is exciting. So I'm trying to just stay in springtime, early summer mode and not let myself get too wrapped up in politics. I'd much rather feed people. So I'm going to end the segment with something called First Fruits. So First Fruits means that the very first produce from your garden should be given to someone, right? In classical Athens, the first fruits were always called the offering of aparche. Except during times of war, this would be a major source of funds for the temples, right? So, of course, the Catholics and Christians took it over. But in Christianity, the tithe is similarly given as a donation or offering, serving as a primary source of income to maintain the religious leaders and facilities. You're supposed to, whatever you grow, the very first piece of fruit, food, is to go to someone else, the poor, the church. So if you guys are growing anything, make sure that you give your first fruits to somebody that needs it, okay?
I already took all your blueberries.
I gave the first blackberry to Deborah, the lady who is, by the way, also worthy of a donation. She runs an organization called Rescue Rue, Adopt a Cock. Bless her heart. I think I mentioned her last week. Most people are not roosters like me. So she takes them in and feeds them and loves them and adopts them out as quickly as she can. She's at 974 adoptions. I know she's brought in thousands of birds. So if you ever are considering a rescue, she's a worthy recipient of your love and chicken feed.
Absolutely. Yes.
All right. Well, peace be upon both of you. Have a wonderful show. And I look forward to hearing John Michael and casting with color. How does he put it, Danielle?
Colorblind casting.
Colorblind casting. I love it. Everything should be colorblind. It should just be on talent and worthiness and you know, whatever it is you do, if you're the best one that does it the very best, you should be the one to get the job. That's the way I look at it. All right.
Yes.
Well, you guys have a great day. Okay.
All right. Love you.
Love you.
I love you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, right to 5:00. That's just how we like it. John Mike cannot come today. He told me, while the good news report was on, that he cannot make it today. So I don't know. Okay, Elizabeth, it's to you. We can either end the show early or come up with a topic for the next hour. That's kind of where I'm at.
Well, we could have conversation and just see where it goes. I love conversation. I think that's we kind of lack the ability to unplug and suit your own thoughts and create. I think that is really what is missing, and that might be the integral piece of the puzzle we need to win this game, is to get away from what they want us to come into my quagmire, and you'll never be able to fly because we put oil on your wings. It's kind of where we're at, and it's like, I think we need that as a species, as a culture, as a community, to just think and bounce ideas off of each other's heads. I think conversation is a lost art, you know. Because, I mean, I was in like the bestest mood today, and I didn't let anything come in my realm to influence what my mood was going to be. I kind of just went with whatever I wanted to do. And it kind of didn't have anything to do with social media or the news or even other people's lives. It was kind of like, I'm just enjoying my day and my thoughts. Okay to not go out in, you know, like I said, play the Sims game, because that's almost what it is when you get outside. It's kind of, everyone's in this little rut, you know, and no one's like, even we don't, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like, and there aren't even like, I have so many beautiful old houses in this neighborhood, big old porches. Matter of fact, the one next to me has a swing, has one of those bench swings. There's nobody on it. Nobody's out enjoying the evening sun or the evening. These are empty houses, you would think. The people are inside with the lights off and perhaps in front of their computers. I don't know what they're doing, you know. Have they been, where are they? What have you done with the population?
It's weird because Joe says the same thing about when he sees, you know, because we live in the land of perpetual sun except for the last, like, 8 months now.
And it's gorgeous.
And every time we see, like, on sunset cliffs, you know, these big, beautiful houses with, like, balconies and things like that. And he's like, why is there nobody on those balconies? And I'm like, oh, maybe because we just get a whole lot of sun, you know. But if it's happening in Chicago, you know.
they're on their big yachts or something. I know. Or maybe they're at work having to pay for that house. But we're not seeing. And then on the flip side, I got a friend who is, I'm like, are you running from the laws? She's on the road all over the place, every state. And I'm thinking, wow, this is her bucket list trip across the whole country to see everything. And she was in front of Mount Rushmore. And I was there with my family, but there was no cars. There was like nobody. We couldn't even find it. We're like, where is it at? But there was no cars, or people were non-existent out west back then. Now there's just a slew of tourists with their RVs, and it's like everybody, apparently they're on the quest to go see everything, which can kind of get a little cumbersome because you're like, you're stuck like in a line of people at the mall.
Right.
People
it's
trying
like
to
U.S. Disneyland.
Exactly. Their American lives, the whole camping thing is like, to me, that would be like being in hell. I'm like, no. I like my nice quiet backyard, you know, but there's no happy medium of like just a regular town full of people, because what are they doing? They're rushing to something, from something, and then. So it's like we're on this, I don't know, on a game board sometimes. So just to be able to sit back, and it used to be you just watch the world go by, but the world's inside their house now. So it's kind of weird. That's a weird thing. And it's almost like, have they stolen our entire capacity to live life and to be a live creature, you know? Like Wild Kingdom style, go see the natural captivity of who they're in the house with the shades down. They can't be the natural human condition. There has to be something wrong with them. And then it's like,
there is, because they're heavily medicated and they don't feel good, and they're hypnotized by not even TV, their phones or their laptops, and it's like, wow, that's when I start thinking in those terms, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're done for. And I don't know, but then I'm like, no, it's not. They haven't beaten us on that level, because there are people out there that are actually doing and living and creating. Like the even though I'm like, will they stop trying to virtue signal and control and take this federal money with this, you know, perpetual COVID bullshit in New York and the Broadway and shows? Because I cringe at being able to go out and do things that I would look at as being something I want to do. You know, the going out to eat was a big thing. And you go to a nice restaurant and go out to the theater. But then it's like, do you have to wear, are there crazy people, you know, out there in masks? Like, I won't do that. But the theater is alive with just fantastic Shakespearean actors. And I'm like, that's still alive. That's been around forever, and that is so contrary to the society they want us to be in when you pop on the TV or even when I'm listening to some audio book. I'm coming to the Book of Enoch is my thing right now. It's amazing. I'm like, learn something every time I listen to it. Then in comes this fucking commercial that's like an assault to my senses, and it's just stupid. It's pure stupid. I'm like, what are you trying to sell? What is it? Are you just trying to hypnotize my mind with this crazy? That's what I'm thinking. And I'm like, that's what they've got going. And my like my little guys that I take to school, they got their phones, and they are just fascinated with. I'm like, what are you listening to? What is this? It's an infomercial. It's a kid's YouTube infomercial on a potato peeler or an apple peeler or some weird thing. And that's captivating this child's mind. And he's like, you got to get this. And he's like 6 or 7. And I'm like, well, that's a good idea, but I can cut him. No, this is better. But this is like, this passes for the awe that little kids would have, where you like go for a ride with your dad in the car and be like, oh, look at the sky, look at that cloud. And look, you would like soak up the world. Now what they're soaking up is a crazy fucking infomercial that passes their days away as opposed to reality. And you're so influenced, you know, and that's where it's like, I don't know. That's where I'm like, yes, let's just sit and talk. Talk and see where the conversation goes. And that's what was the funnest thing about when my childhood was, that's what the adults and that's what when the family would get together, they'd all get into one room at a table and they'd all talk and interact. And you would, the coolest thing would be if they let you sit in the same room with them, you were like open to the whole world as opposed to, you know, running around with your cousins and whatnot. And right. I don't see. Do you see people do that? Sit and talk. I'm kind of a.
Yes,
I'm a,
and no.
I'm an introvert, and I'm just like, I'm exhausted to be around people, so I'm not around them that much. The ones that I am around is like a work environment, and they're all just fucking idiots. I'm just like, Jesus God, this is why I don't go out in public. But what are you? What's your?
Well, yes and no. I do. You know, I do see people talking. There's also this, like, hue of don't say anything that is beyond weather and, can't even say politics, can't talk about religion, can't talk about, you know, human sacrifice and you know, pedophilia being the, you know, colonial secret, can't do any of that. Yeah. But even weather these days, when I'm like, oh, yeah, we haven't had sun for 8 months. I'm like, yeah, it must be geoengineering. My husband's kicking me under the table, right? Because that's still not polite.
Oh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of weird.
the creepiness of that Tucker clip that you played that you thought was really funny, it was chilling because it was so true. We are in that land of dystopian servitude to what Big Brother says is what we think.
Yeah.
And we can't, you know, and it's not funny because it's true. And like the big massive tumor in the back of North Korea's father, the father of North Korea. I don't remember ever hearing about that, but that is the epitome of the emperor has no clothes. You cannot say that this fool is walking around naked and no, his cape is not a beautiful cloak. You know, this man is crazy and he's naked and we're pretending he's not. And here we are, we're being overtaken by all this technology. Oh, here's something that I think that's cool to talk about. This technology that we didn't have. Like back in the day, it was always those were the taboos. You can't talk about, you know, anything that would upset people because you wanted to have a nice time. So I didn't talk politics and religion and I don't think human sacrifice and pedophilia was never a topic because it was just such that was unheard of because it didn't happen in such mass quantities and wasn't known about back. But it's always been the let's not, you know, start a ruckus at the Thanksgiving table. That scenario,
right?
How
about this? Listen to this. This is 36 seconds of Joe Biden and John Fetterman this week. These are leaders.
Jesus. Well, yes.
Listen to this.
And why? Why are they? Why is no one collectively screaming at the top of their lungs?
Because
they
it's impolite, Elizabeth. Because it's impolite.
Oh, my God.
You know?
Haven't they got? And how did we get there? How did we allow this to creep into the land of it's now impolite, it's not fair, you know, the land of the Disabilities Act is superseded common sense where they have the right to be.
Well, they have the right to drive with your phone.
The president again next to a collapsed bridge here, and he is here to commit to work with the governor and the delegation to make sure that we get fixed quick, fast as well too. This is a president that is committed to infrastructure, and then on top of that, the jewel. Law of the infraction bill that is going to make sure that there's going to be bridges all across like this, all across America getting rebuilt.
Okay. So there's that.
Fetterman. The bill for bridges. Wow.
I think Lily's here.
Was that his proof of, that was his proof of life video, huh?
Oh, my God. Hello.
That's good. Welcome to the show.
I thought that was Lily. Is that Lily?
Oh.
Hey, how are you?
Yay, there's Lily. We
how
love
you.
We're great.
It is me. I'm so sorry that I'm late or having a crazy busy Father's Day.
No problem at all.
I'm glad you're having
we
a
just
good
love
one.
You anytime, awesome. Anywhere.
Awesome, awesome. You're always welcome.
I love you guys. How are you doing?
We're doing good. We're talking this and that, actually. We're talking about whatever. You know, it's funny. They passed a law in Texas today. And, thinking of the governor of Texas, he's in a wheelchair. And I never really knew that, but I was like, oh, that's interesting. And
Abbott
he passed a law. I believe so, yeah. And they don't show – that's like the FDR, syndrome where they just kind of like they downplay that. But every so often you'll see him in his wheelchair. They'll pan back, but they kind of like just do headshots of him. And I thought, well, that's cool. You know, there's, I mean, he's proved himself. That shouldn't make a difference at all. And as long as you're mentally capable, that's fantastic. But he's passed a law that has protected the, you can wear your hair any way you want, Bill. My governor did that last year. But it's still not, I can do so many other things I can't do, but I sure can wear my hair any way I want. And I thought, oh, my God, it's creeped over into Texas. Well, it's the end of the world because Texas was that last bastion of freedom. You've been overtaken by a man in a wheelchair who talked the right talk, but that shouldn't be. That is the crazy leftist neoliberal agenda, is that kind of shit. And it's just creeping.
Right.
Under the guise, you know. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is an insidious little game that they're playing. Because they're still, you know, be fighting over mandatory. Nothing should be mandatory if that's a pass of law protecting your rights to wear crazy hair. You know, that's the weird problem we're wearing. Honestly. So you got, hey, kitties. How's your kids today? Did they get to do all the fun things that they wanted to do? I hear them. I hear them. I don't hear them.
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
I was saying hi to your background.
Sorry.
Yeah,
they got to do all the things. They got chickens, and a neighbor abandoned some rabbits when they moved. And so they got, I was asked, because I'm the crazy animal lady, if we would take the rabbits. So they're living with the chickens, and they're happy as larks. But I told the girls if the government gets much more crazy, I might start raising meat rabbits.
Oh, I'm sure they didn't like that.
Well, like, keep them as pets, but then, you know, when they have babies and the babies get big, then trade somebody some of the meat to butcher them for me, because I wouldn't be able to do it, but they could, you know, and then they could have,
right.
Like, wonderful, happy lives,
yeah.
And then we could have rabbits, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how it used to be. A real old, nice farm had, like, several different houses, and they had the rabbit house, the chicken house, the hen house, the pigsty. And then you had, you know, horses, and then you had the cows and whatnot. But it took you through the course of whatever you needed for the season to always have meat.
Yeah, I'm like, you just, you know, I think it's like the most humane way to do it, right? Like, you're friends with them, you love them, you treat them really well. And then when they are grown ups, you know, like, you eat some of them, and it's a fair trade.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah, I was like, people think I'm crazy for saying that, but I'm considering doing it.
No,
you should. Yeah.
That's a fantastic. And you could also make beautiful coats and boots and hats. That's the best gloves. My mom had a pair that had rabbit fur in the middle, in the inside of these
gloves. Yeah, use everything. If you're going to eat them, use everything.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't make that stuff personally, but my mom is really good at sewing. So I feel like if I gave the skins to my mom, she could totally make stuff.
Absolutely. And that is, it's a lost art. And those are the things that we need to be able to be prepared to do and be able to know how to do.
Right.
Out of desperation. And I do believe that, you know, because Danielle and I were talking about, you know, the disconnect of society and how technology, I fear, sometimes has stolen our humanity. Getting back to the rustic way of doing things and knowing how to do that is going to be – it's almost going to be cutting-edge vogue, you know, how we're going to be so appalled with this plastic Hollywood lifestyle of nothingness to go back into learning how to – make your own bread, your own cheese, natural organic food that is not lab grown and yucky and, you know, questioning whether or not, is this actual meat or what am I eating here? Is this like, you know, human hybrid? You know, when your meat doesn't taste good and it's real cheap and you buy it, you're like, oh, God, you know. So that's going to be like the cool, high-end, sought-after, authentic lifestyle. It's not going to be looked at.
I sure hope so.
I don't think,
because that's all I want to do.
They try to demonize this with furs are, you know, terrible and whatnot, but this is, it's the best stuff, and animals were given to us as a gift to have as a gift to use as you know, as we need with love. And that really good old fashioned sought after homemade, you know, the bearskin.
Well, and there's farmers that I know that eat their animals, that treat their animals better than a lot of people treat their pets. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So I think that, and we need to get away from the factory farming, but also, you know, just like when we're talking about feeding our neighbors and stuff, sorry. You know, like chickens lay so many eggs, and then, you know, like rabbits breed pretty heavily, so you would literally be able to sustain your family, and I feel like I could sustain my neighborhood, you know, like, obviously I would need help, like, being the only one, but, you know, like, I could potentially do that with rabbits and chickens, and, you know, my garden is producing pretty well, so I decided that I'm still doing the RV, but since it was taking longer, and I was just felt like I was like sitting around waiting for prophecy. I was like, you know, I'm just going to make this everything that I want it to be for while I'm like here, you know, and then if I end up like leaving permanently, I can do that. Or if I keep it as a home base, I can do that. But I'm just like trying to create a homestead in my yard, you know, until we figure out what we're doing next. And then we'll just drag the chickens and rabbits along and stuff. But
right. Right. And okay. I'd like to play a 5-minute clip. This is another Jimmy Dore, but this is, did you guys hear about the Harvard morgue manager got caught selling body parts? Did you?
Yes.
Did you hear about the, yeah. Can I play like a 5-minute clip on that? Yeah.
Of course.
I should say no, because this is conversation hours, but I'll let you guess.
Oh, thanks. All right. Cool. It's only 5 minutes.
Things get crazier at Harvard than you would ever think. Harvard medical morgue manager charged with selling body parts. This is for real. The manager of a Harvard medical school's morgue was indicted on federal charges he stole body parts as part of a human remains trafficking conspiracy involving his wife and others. This is from Harvard. Cedric Lodge allowed buyers into the school's morgue to choose body parts from donated cadavers and transported heads, brains, skin, and bones to his home in New Hampshire, according to a 5-count indictment filed in Pennsylvania.
I think I saw this. Do you see what this guy looks like? Have you seen him?
No.
I think if it's the same thing I'm thinking of, he looks hilarious.
Oh,
like,
really?
He looks like a guy that does that.
Some crimes defy understanding, said the U.S. attorney. He called the conspiracy particularly egregious because victims had donated the remains for educating students and advancing science. For them and their families to be taken advantage of in the name of profit is appalling. My mom donated her body to science. I wonder if somebody drove her head.
Well, I think the entire population did around the time of the pandemic.
Yeah. Named as you.
Not me.
Named as buyers in the indictment are Katrina McLean of Salem, Massachusetts, who ran a studio called Cat's Creepy Creations, and Joshua Taylor of Westlawn, Pennsylvania. Lodge's wife, Denise, is accused of shipping the remains and operating a PayPal account that received $37,355 in proceeds from the conspiracy. Jeremy Pauley, 41, of Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, was charged separately. A seventh, Candace Chapman Scott of Little Rock, Arkansas, was previously indicted in Arkansas. The defendants were all part of a nationwide network that bought and sold human remains stolen from Harvard Medical School and a mortuary in Little Rock where Ms. Scott worked. This is really dark. A According to federal prosecutors, from 2018 to 2022, Mr. Lodge sold parts from cadavers that had been donated to medical school and dissected, including heads, brains, skin, and bones before their scheduled cremations.
Yeah, they're not using them.
Well, if it was after a cremation, it wouldn't really...
Wow, using every part of the buffalo.
At times, Mr. Lodge, very respectful.
Yeah.
No, don't waste. Frugal doesn't mean cheap. It means you don't waste. At times, Mr. Lodge brought Mrs. McLean, Mr. Taylor, and others into the morgue to choose which parts they wanted. On October 2020, prosecutors said Ms. McLean agreed to buy two dissected faces for $600. Prosecutors said that Ms. McLean stored and sold remains at Cat's Creepy Creations, which advertises creepy dolls, oddities, and bone art.
I hope that they're, in all this spying, they're tracking everyone involved with this who bought that. Like, who's buying faces online?
In June or July of 2021, she shipped human skin to Mr. Pauly and engaged his services to tan the skin to create leather. From September 28th to July 2021, Mr. Taylor transferred more than $37,000 in electronic payments to Ms. Lodge for body parts that had been stolen by Mr. Lodge. In one transaction, Mr. Taylor sent Ms. Lodge $1,000 with a memo that read, head number 7. Oh my God. As part of another payment, he sent Ms. Lodge $200 with a memo that read, brains. Prosecutors said that Mr. Pauly bought remains from Ms. Scott, who stole body parts from the mortuary and crematory in Little Rock, where she worked. And now you know the rest of the story. Trust science, Chris.
I don't want to know the rest of the story, actually. Yes. I'd like to end the story here and not know what became of...
I know.
Who's ordering... You know it ain't going to be something good. At best, it'll be creepy art. That's the case scenario.
That's the case. Wow. There was a serial killer in Wisconsin, I think. Ed Gein, I think,
yeah,
was his name. And then he killed people, and then he would make furniture out of them. Like he would.
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is partially based on him.
Oh,
so
really?
Psycho. They're all variations on Ed Gein. Ed Gein had the face mask made of, that's Leatherface.
And he would make like a lampshade out of their skin.
A bowl out of a skull. Do you remember? Beans out of.
I think it was Steve Segrin had that joke. He goes, he wrote a book about it. It's called My Mother, My Shelf.
All right, that's enough of that. But my mother, my shelf. But, like, yes, it's fine to use rabbit skin. You know, I don't really care what PETA has to
do. I'm like, why is she playing this? But that was interesting how your mind works. I like that. That's the cool thing about conversation. We went from, you know, that was a normal thing, fur trappers. Opened up this country, French fur trappers. That was a business. It was a, you know, nothing was terrible about that. It was well sought out after, and people loved this. And now it's like demonized. You have to worry about, oh gosh, should I raise rabbits or am I a terrible person?
Yeah, on the highest levels of quote unquote.
On the other end, here's these people out of where? Arkansas. Where the Clintons came from. Here's this
of course,
this entrepreneurial underground black market for body parts. Where did that happen to? Where'd they get that idea from? China? I don't know. That's like bubbled up. Here's the underbelly of. How deep does that go? That's disgusting. That's horrifying. And then it's
yeah. We're
to
made
be,
to feel guilty about using rabbit skin, rabbit fur.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, don't ever. But this story, that was from 2018?
That was from
now
this week.
About it? I know, but when I heard 2018, this was found out about?
Yes, but Harvard was just indicted this week, like implicated.
Also took
this
that
week.
Long. Oh, my gosh. Poor Harvard. Wonder if people You know, enrollment go down, or will they send more money for their Pride Week? I don't know. Oh my God, this needs to be all over the place instead of what I haven't even turned the news on. What's the news about today? Still the election, the indictment.
Today, the indictment a little bit, but, you know.
Will they talk about this ever? We need to talk about this every week. Every week that there is a market for body parts that's operating with PayPal accounts. Who
dead or alive.
Has access to these? Who's buying these? And why this is not like some crazy man from the Silence of the Lambs is what he's referring to as the guy that wanted to make vests and clothing out of people's skins. And I don't know whether that not that was actually real or part of that book. But, you know, to glorify, make jokes about Dahmer, that's, you know, my feelings on Dahmer. But this is real. This is right there with the pedophilia. Are we going to be shocked and then make jokes about it and then it's not real and it's going to go away?
Yeah.
Just like the Satan worshiping pedophiles that were brought out on Donahue and Oprah when she first came out back in the 80s and it's been going on forever. And we still kind of like pretend it's not there, like the big tumor in the back of the neck.
Yes.
And it gets
worse and worse. But things that are part of our heritage, part of our, you know, our culture, part of our livelihoods, the way that we're going to survive. You know, how do you survive a cold winter without a heater? Some kind of animal fur, you know?
And
those are the things that PETA is going out and throwing fake blood on and all of these things, you know?
How do you make soap? You take butcher one pig. They would have, you know, they'd butcher the pigs, and they would take every part of the body. They would make oil from the lard where you for your lamps, your soaps. Everything came from, they didn't waste anything from the one animal. It was a big thing. And there was enough for the whole community to survive the winter.
Yeah.
And now they're like, oh, eating bacon is, you know, you're a horrible person for this. We've gone from there to there. We need to.
Native Americans hunting buffalo, right? What they used.
Exactly.
Even down to their tenants, they would take out and use for bows, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Same thing, the Eskimos and the whales. One whale would be like, oh, we'll make it. We'll make it through another year. And we need to be able to have a good perception in our head that it's okay, number one, to do this. Number two, we should be able to learn how to do this because, you know, there are, you know, people go down a rabbit hole and are freaked out about the government and the underground bases and whatnot. There are older underground tunnels from another time where people actually went underground to survive. How did they do it? Would we be able to do the same thing? Would we be able to make God, this dog, I'm sorry. Is it irritating me? Would we be able to
maybe
do it?
Maybe there's a rabbit
outside. And know that it's okay. It's okay to do it. And number one, it's okay to be able to have that knowledge and go back to the basics of rodeo days, so to speak, where they, you know, used to have the reenactment circus where people would go, that's not a circus, but circuit, where, you know, they'd go and reenact the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's been demonized, but that used to be a thing. The Renaissance fairs, that used to be a thing. It's okay. I mean, I think that stuff should come back. You should be able to have different subcultures of society to live your dream, so to speak, not just the goth, not just the butterfly, unicorn, furry, what, go do that, good. But also, I'm going to be a Viking, you know?
Yes.
I'm going to dress like this, and that's going to, you know, everyone should be able to embrace their inner, what time period would you like to live in? Can't we get back to that? Do we have to go into this land of transhumanism? And robotics and off to the fucking other planet? No, I want to go. I really do. I'd like to try the Vikings for a little bit, and then maybe I go a little bit further in the Edwardian. You know, maybe in the
Edwardians are about what that's
you
what
know?
We're about to live, relive, the Edwardians.
Did you see the Vogue
the Vogue dresses that came out for the men?
No.
They look exactly like, they look like Rockefellers from right before they get onto the Titanic. They got the long coats. All they're missing is the stovetop hats. That's a good look. I'm like, ooh,
God, I wish
Ty
was still here. He'd have a whole lot to say about this.
But that is like, wow. So the captains of industry are back, and we're taking over the men who rule the world. This is how we dressed. I'm like, yeah, that's interesting. I like it because it takes us away from the bubble wrap, crazy triangle piece of cheese coming out of their head or whatever. But they were like, what is this? But it speaks volumes about who's in charge. BlackRock? Mm-hmm. Because, hey, this is how our daddy's dressed. And now you'll buy it and like it because we said so. But
right.
That's the new thing coming out. And I'm like, that's very interesting. It's
well,
classic.
But the other half of the Edwardian era, it wasn't just all top hats and morning coats. You know, the other half of it was starving peasants who used the land and budding technology that was coming out at that time to make it so that they would survive. You know, that there was one element of, you know, I guess serving the upper class, but the other element is that the upper class is not going to be responsible for our survival, and so we'll take every scrap of land that we can and put a goat on it and put chickens on it. And, you know, even though our livestock has to go to be sold so that we can pay our rent, we can have our own little scraps of land and survive. Really, the biggest lesson, in my opinion, from the Edwardian era was that the surplus class, you know, survived, you know, even though the odds were totally against them.
Well, and the flip of this is back then, the very poor only had a few chickens, and now the very rich can only do that. The poor can't do it. The poor live in these squalor housing places,
right,
and apartments.
It's funny because back then, back in the day, back in the Edwardian era, poor people had horses and rich people had cars, and now it's reversed. Mm-hmm. Poor people have cars and rich
and
people
rich have
horses.
Mm-hmm. Let's sit back. Lily, what do you think about that? Let's sit back and ponder that dynamic, because
I definitely want to know what Lily has to say about that.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's all about self-sufficiency, right? Because so then if you were rich, you had a car because they were like this new fancy in thing, right? That, I mean, if we look at Tartaria in real history, I'm not sure that they were actually new, but we were told that they were, right? That was this new great thing that everybody wanted. And they sold the lie that horses are too expensive to feed and it's better to have gas for your car. That'll be less expensive and take up less room and blah, blah, blah. But now, you know, like as things shift, we are realizing that all of that was a lie and a trick. And so the people who are the wealthiest have land and they have, you know, like ways to be self-sustainable, to grow their own food, to raise their own animals. And they've got all of the, for the most part, low-income people living in apartments in suburbs where they can't, I mean, they can kind of grow food, but not like nearly as much, right? And a lot of people don't know how to plant indoors, and so they feel like they can't, and they don't. You know, and so I think it's really interesting because, like, all the roles are being reversed, you know? So all of these fancy things that everybody thought that they wanted that were like the so-called American dream, you know, the fancy house and the really nice car and keeping up with the Joneses, you know, now everybody's realizing, well, shit, if you just have some chickens, you know, and you could grow some food and you have a little piece of land to be on, you're much better off than having all of these material things that we never actually needed in the first place.
Well, honestly, I think the next...
And I think there's a big movement to that. Like, a lot of people are becoming nomadic because they don't want to do, like, the 9-to-5 soul-sucking bullshit jobs anymore.
The RV.
you know, it's like the RV thing is huge, where people are moving into RVs and vans. And in that way, that's cool because we build community, like mobile communities, which is, you know, like I want to have a home base and also do the mobile community both. But like that is exciting because we can do mutual aid with each other, right? Like if we can travel, we can be our own post, you know, and like go and go to a festival or something and sell soap, but then stop by my friends in the next town and bring eggs or chickens or whatever to trade with them. There's like such exciting possibilities, you know, like for all of the things that we're doing and that we can do. We just got sidetracked. And so now we needed to remember, you know, like who the hell we are and what we're doing here. But I think a lot of people are really figuring it out. And I'm really proud of people for that.
Absolutely. I mean, and honestly, like, you know, how long, Lily, have you know, you and I and many others been saying, get chickens? Like, you know, if you've got any kind of a backyard, if you've got any kind of yard at all, get a couple chickens and be self-sufficient in that way. And then this whole egg crisis happened, right? And honestly, like, if it keeps going the way that I think it's going to go, like, chickens are going to be a Louis Vuitton size status symbol in the future, right? Yep. You know, like how it's, you know, Mercedes, Louis Vuitton, chickens. Because people aren't going to have them.
That's exactly what's going on. And
we have to make it sexy.
We have to unlearn what they've try to put in our heads, that it's bad to kill a rabbit. It's okay. And frankly, I mean, I've watched them be skinned in front of me. I think you have to get that. And I personally, I'm like, I don't want to, nope. But how badly do you want to be a self-sufficient adult? You can't have servants do things for you. You have to learn how to take care of yourself. How hungry are you? You know, it's kind of like, are we going to be able to get past that squirmish phase of, I don't want to do it, but, you know, you got to become the pioneer woman that they used to immortalize at one time.
And you don't even necessarily have to go and be able to, like, skin a rabbit. You have to be able to catch a chicken, I would say. But skinning a rabbit isn't necessarily, like, it's not necessary. You can get sheep. You can get an alpaca, right? If you really are, you can't break out of this, you know, circle of life mentality. You can go and get farm animals that are alpacas, sheep, that you can, you know, use, shear, and keep alive, you know. There are a lot of different options. It's not just a black and white decision that, you know, that has been put upon us. Either you love animals and you protect them, or you hate animals and you kill them and you wear them as trophies. Right? That's the kind of mentality.
Well, but that's like the circle of life, you know? Like, you're supposed to love and honor and respect the animal, and then you are supposed to take it into your body to feed yourself and thank that animal for its life force, you know? Like, because it's sharing with you, and it's this, like, beautiful thing, and it's the same thing that we do, right? Like, worms and birds and all kinds and fungi, like, don't hate us. But they will consume us after we've passed on, because that is, you know, because then we just go back
brilliant
into the earth.
Brilliant point, Lily. Brilliant.
And so I just think that people get really, like, highly emotional. And, you know, obviously we don't have to be mean to the animal. You don't have to make it suffer. You don't have to, like, drag it out. But, you know, like, I don't know how sad it is to be just hopping along, living a wonderful life, being happy, and then all of a sudden being with the Creator. And I don't know how that is so much more mean than living in a feedlot for your entire life and being not treated well and not having humans, like, show you love and not being happy. And then you know that you're dying because you have this, like, line, and you know animals are smart, and you're in this line, and they're leading you to the slaughter, and you can smell it. And you can hear it, and you know that it's happening. Like, I think I'd rather just go scoop up one of the rabbits that I've held and kissed and loved and thank it for its life and eat it. You know what I mean? Rather than knowing that my animal had this kind of, like, shitty life that it didn't enjoy and then knew that it was going to die before it did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I was going to be eaten, I would just be hopping along and not know what happened.
And we just, you know, we just listened to that story about how, like, after we die, what, you know, what science, quote unquote, does to our bodies, you know, sells it for art, it for handbags, perhaps, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So really, like, you know, it's a really good lesson for us to understand that we can live symbiotic relationships with animals. And that's how basically we were designed to be versus what they've got set up for us, where we're going to eat ourselves, eat the rich, eat ourselves, you know, eat crickets, you know, all of these things that they've got set up for us. And you know, so breaking out of that programming is important.
And don't grow food. Yeah, it's like, hello, yeah. We're going back in time, away from your crazy, and learn how to fight with rocks. How about that? You can take everything away from us. We still have rocks we can fight with. Oh, my God.
Actually.
Seriously, crazy. Crazy, Tom. Do you know that today they arrested 3 more people in Illinois that were at the January 6th insurrectionists? A man and his 2 aunts, because they were on social media.
I did not
know
that.
And they're still, yes, well, it was on my news. And we're so proud of it. And I was just living my dystopian nightmare with, you know, they're putting the president of the United States in jail so that he can't run again. And ignoring this bumbling embezzler and anyone who dares speak up against this, we're putting you in prison without a trial. Welcome to America, guys. And I'm like, wow.
Thank you, Obama, for that. For signing the NDAA Act
exactly.
That allows that.
The NDAA. Did you watch Roseanne? Roseanne is doing a podcast, and it's a little... She's a little hard to listen to. I listened to her last night. But she has some great points. If you can make it through. She's a little too brass for me, a little too much. But I guess.
Well, that's her whole thing.
You know,
welcome, listener. There's a caller on the line just listening. Press 1 if you want to be a part of the conversation. If not, just welcome.
Yeah, please jump in and help us. Help us to figure out what's going on. But Roseanne brought out Obama and how he did the NDAA and just opened up the doorway to make it okay to perform propaganda against the American people. And that's not talked about enough.
And in prison people without any kind of trial or crime or anything. Yes.
Yes, yes. And that was the one thing I was like, oh, I only talk about the propaganda. I forgot the fact that he pretty much opened up the gulags. Let me build the gulags and we'll fill them
up. Yeah,
just
one,
like Biden did. Biden did with the prisons. When they privatized the prisons, in goes all the black men because you're all getting high and it's not okay to get high. Away went the entire generation of fathers for Father's Day in the black community because they're all in jail. And Biden did that. And I'm like, oh, my. In increments. Little baby steps.
Right, and that's the difference between
and
differentiated between crack and cocaine, which is the same drug with one additive, you know, but cocaine was a white drug, and, you know, crack was not.
So that was
mandatory sentencing.
Nancy Reagan had to have a war on drugs because – you can't be racist. All drugs are bad. So everyone went to jail. Don't forget about that because that was an argument. And no, zero tolerance. Dare to keep children off the drugs. Nancy Reagan did that. And then we didn't get any drugs for nowhere. No drugs for anyone.
Except for the Sadler family.
All the bad drugs came in. But I remember the shift with the politics. But I didn't know that they were arresting people and putting them in these for-profit jails that they had just built everywhere.
That's
and
right.
I don't think, and still, that's still, I talked about. But that is a big thing, that our jails are just full of people that need not really be there, but someone's making money off it.
Well, right. They're legal slaves, right? That's the whole thing about the amendments, right? That, you know, it was illegal to have slaves unless slaves broke the law, and then now you're back in custody. And in my opinion, and, you know, please feel free to correct me, but in my opinion, I think that the African-American darker skin communities had very good family structures, right? Like very strong, very strong family structures. And in order to break these family structures apart, they, you know, this war on drugs, you know, stopped targeting white people with cocaine and started targeting black people with crack, which is the same drug. And that's really like was an assault, one of the assaults on the African-American communities, right? That into, you know, put Planned Parenthoods into black neighborhoods, you know, that was another one, right? I mean, it was a structural breakdown of a very strong and very proud and very organized group of people. I mean, and that's certainly not the first time we've seen this in America. You know, obviously starting with the Native Americans.
They introduced heroin into the Harlem.
Yes, that was another one. Yes.
And that was predominantly black, where all the good music was at. But then let's give them the worst drug on earth here and let's try this. And that was a thriving community. Just had heroin, and it turns to shit. The government knows wonderful ways to destroy and build people up and then destroy them again and make them think that we're their heroes. We're your hero. We're here to save you after we've destroyed you. And that has – we see what you're doing, and we're not going to let you do this anymore.
Yeah.
That's
I actually have a theory, and my husband argues with me all the time because he actually has, I've said this before, a degree in educational psychology with an emphasis on race and racism, master's degree.
Okay.
Race and racism, like that's his, you know, his mentor. And, you know, I argue with him about this because I have a theory that not only were Native Americans already here when the, you know, English and the Spanish and the French came over, but there were also a whole lot of Africans here because I really do believe that Africans were master sailors before, you know, stated history, if you will. And with the trade winds coming from Africa, Caribbean, to the United States, these master sailors, I believe, had massive cultures, settlements here in America, just like Native Americans. And so when they're like, oh, it was, you know, and honestly, like part of the oppression, white social frame that we put on our, you know, our community, our country, is that the Africans were too feeble-minded to be able to get here. So we had to go enslave them, right? We had to go and school them. Now, yeah,
it's
exactly. Yes. So yeah, exactly. Exactly. So not only were the men, women, and children of Africa so feeble-minded in our own culture and our own education that they could not defend themselves from taking the able-bodied men and putting them on ships. You know what I mean? Like that.
And
there,
Shaka
there's
Zulu.
A,
the great African nation. There's so many. Africa was a continent full of amazing civilizations. Very few white people
advanced
in Africa. They were not feeble-minded. And they're their oldest. It's the oldest bastion of civilization is Africa.
Yes.
So
I agree.
Whole, you know, they turned upon that was the. I was just reading today on the Persians. When the Persians were conquering, I can't remember who they were. A lot of these nations that are lost because I'm like, I've never heard of these guys. But the Persians, I was like, oh, I know the Persians. They threatened, if you dare to go to war with us, this is what will happen to you, is we will make all of your men eunuchs. All of your boys will be eunuchs. All of your girls will be sold into slavery. That was a common thing. Common thing to sell people into slavery. We take away your freedom and you are now sold in, you're a commodity. They would do that all the time. So that was your lot in life. It just depended on where you went to. And that became a motive of commerce. They were sold by the whoever was in charge took the poor souls who ended up being a slave. Boom, off you go. They were not feeble-minded. This was a diabolical
for sure
system that's been forever.
Yes.
And, you know, what's so funny is they don't want – they talk about anybody that they catch a picture of them as being dark-skinned, they were called a Creole a Frenchman who was part Creole.
Yes.
That was black. There were Moors. The Moors were here. The Egyptians were here. There's hieroglyphics and pyramids, and half of this country is named after Egypt. Memphis is an Egyptian city. Memphis is all over the place. Seriously, is that a trip? That's a trip. It's funny they don't want to – if you're going to wipe history away, you need to clean it all up. But they always seem to have to leave a crumb as like, see, let's
they
be smart ones figure this out. Isn't that funny? It's kind of,
yeah, they have to
I'm
tell
like,
us.
Memphis. Memphis is so Elvis, isn't it? And so down home Alabama. No, it's Egyptian.
That's amazing. Absolutely. But they have to portray it as the mean old white people,
you know,
stole, that went over. They could not even defend themselves, even being – it's a fertile crescent. It's like,
Right, but the heart of Jim Crow, Memphis.
Yes.
They couldn't have. Did you not know that black people lived in Memphis? That's just the height. When you really think about these things, because the Deep South was the worst, and they couldn't. They weren't talking about feeble-minded. Did they not know that Memphis?
They did, yeah.
If you want to change, you know what I'm saying?
They knew. It's
almost comical. Comical.
It is comical, yeah. Except for the rage brought up on these topics. We only have a minute left, Lily. I feel like we've neglected you, honey. Do you want to say anything before we go?
Did we bore her?
No, she's probably with her baby.
Sorry, baby. Oh, okay.
But yeah, but exactly. Go ahead.
I'm so glad that everybody popped in to have a listen. I hope you liked it. I hope you come back. And feel free to stop in any time and have a conversation with Daniel. I enjoyed it. I love you so much.
All right. I love you all. Please share this video. If you can, thank you, Ty. Thank you, Lily. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you, Mom, for joining in and everybody in the chat. Please share this video if you can. And hopefully we will talk to you next week. Bye.
God bless you. Bye-bye.